another exciting broadcast day.
866-901-ADAM, 866-901-ADAM. Good times. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, Big O'Brien.
Not interested.
Yes, you are, bitch.
That's just my new favorite drink.
I'm interested.
I know who you're going in the grotto with.
I'm interested. Adam, did you get evacuated?
Oh, because I have a house in Malibu?
Yes.
No, I wasn't. You know, I have a very weird component in me that was not interested much at all in the fire that was in Malibu, even though I have a house in Malibu.
I'm with you.
Really?
I was hoping mine would burn.
Well, here's the thing, and maybe it's healthy, and maybe it's not. I can't. There's some things I'm very sane about, than other reasons. Maybe it's not sanity, but I have a house in Malibu. I bought it. I fixed it up. It's a nice piece of land. It's not a spectacular house, but it's a nice piece of land. And it's not in the fire part. Now, you guys have been watching the news, have been hearing all about the fires in Malibu. There's also fires up south of here, or I should say probably north of here. I have to figure it out. But there's fires up in Castaic and all kinds of parts around here.
North plus, and northwest.
Northwest of here. Plus, there's fires everywhere. I got a house in Malibu. The fire was close to Pepperdine. Oh, my God. Could you imagine going to Pepperdine? It's right on PCH.
I mean, I can't believe people go there.
It's essentially a college above Johnny Carson's house.
Yeah.
Like, every rich celebrity in the world lives in a place called the Colonies, or at least somewhere in there on Malibu. There's Pacific Coast Highway. There's the Pacific Ocean. And right on that Pacific Ocean is some of the most expensive real estate on the planet.
Yeah.
They're small, bad 70s condos that are right on the water there that are $5 million. No backyard, no front yard, just a crappy 70s condo that if it was in Muncie, Indiana, would be $65,000.
Yeah, but it's if it was in Tokyo, it's 5.5. It would be 11.
Well, that's probably
true. Crazy. It's crazy there.
In Tokyo?
Yeah, the real estate.
Right, but there wasn't a fire there.
That is true, but there was a real estate price.
Right. Okay. It's not that expensive. It's fairly cheap in Malibu?
Hell no.
All right.
It's like some of the most expensive real estate in the world.
It's expensive. Not as expensive as Tokyo, but it's expensive. And it's right on the beach. And then there's a college directly above all that super expensive real estate. And that's called Pepperdine. And if you go to school there, you may as well just live in Johnny Carson's house for 4 years, or in my case, 7.5 years, before you decide to quit. It's above PCH, and I don't know what the hell you would do for your kid. I mean, if he's there on a free ride for volleyball, so be it. But other than that, I don't know why you'd want your kid to go to school in Paradise, because eventually they're going to have to leave, and they're not going to want to leave. But that's where the fire hit. Now, my house is a little farther north, but the fire's still blowing all over the place, and the fire's jumping over PCH and burning houses that are literally on the edge of the ocean. Happened to Suzanne Summers' house a couple of months back. Remember that story about 8 months ago?
Yeah, I got a couple calls yesterday, Adam, from TMZ saying reports are that your house, you'd been evacuated.
Who, me? Can I confirm? Me personally?
Yeah.
Well, I don't live there, so it's hard to evacuate some place you've already evacuated or you've never actually evacuated.
You never evacuated. How can you evacuate?
I can't evac if I'm not evac.
You're not vac.
How can you be asked to leave a party you've never attended, I guess, is the question.
But easily.
So do you know if your house is
I have
not
no
near
idea.
Really?
No, I mean, here's
do
the
you
thing.
Care?
I mean, I do and I don't. On one hand,
you sweat equity. And I don't do that. If I have the money, I buy it. And if it burns, it's hopefully insured. And if not, it's crap I shouldn't have had and feel guilty that I bought it.
I don't know what the house is insured for. I don't know if I would make money or lose money if it burned to the ground. Here's all I know. I know this sounds way too healthy. I guarantee you I'm not this healthy. There's nothing me thinking about it is going to do as far as stopping the fire going to the house. It'll ruin my Sunday. Yeah. I spent a Sunday watching some football, hanging out with my kids. And, of course, when the news was on, I looked to see if my house was on fire or not. But outside of that, I'm all for doing things. I'm all for thinking about things you can do something about. But I'm not really for thinking about things you can't do anything about. I couldn't go down there. I couldn't get there. The road was closed off, so on and so forth. I didn't want to kill entire Sunday pacing. Either the house was going up in flames or it wasn't going up in flames is the way I looked at it. I had insurance, and either way, I wasn't going to change things. So well, philosophically, it's a good way to go, although it's hard to do.
It was a double whammy question. Mm-hmm. One, do you care? Because I was interested in how you feel about inanimate objects. I don't care. As a matter of fact, I went over... I moved to my condo this weekend, which was horrifying. Gretchen went to Vegas. I had two kids in an 800-square-foot apartment while moving into a real-life condo. But they had to be separated, and no one could leave them alone. It was just, it was a horrifying weekend.
The kids had to be separated?
Yeah, because they fight. In a room as small as 800 square feet, yeah. They fight bad, and it gets really hard
Dante?
To kill them. No, Isabella. Dante just wants to make up. Although he threw a tantrum last
night. Who's Isabella fighting with?
Dante.
But Dante's a sweet little angelic little.
It's bad. It's bad. And
but Isabella's like it's 8-7 years older than him.
Yeah.
Well, I thought girls I thought 14-year-old girls weren't supposed to know their kid She's brothers 12. Existed.
That I am praying for that day.
Really?
I'm praying for 2 days of that Bonnie jostled. One. When Isabella doesn't know Dante exists, and when Mrs. Bonaducci doesn't know that Mr. Bonaducci exists, those will make me very happy days.
Isabella goes at, now Dante's six?
Dante is six.
6 years old. Man, well, maybe I got my time. I just thought 12-year-old girls who are especially goth were supposed to think they were adults and supposed to treat the six-year-old like he was a newborn almost.
I think that is, she's not goth. It's a new thing. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's emo.
Oh, emo. Yeah. Right.
Which freaks me out every
Which
time.
Which is like the retarded cousin of goth?
Yes. Yes. It's the weeping. It's Johnny Crybaby with the one tear. It's the ionized Cody.
Right.
Of goth.
Okay. So so these two will fight. They'll fight.
Yeah.
They'll go at it.
Tooth and nail and forever.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I bought Dante the last time I was in Tijuana. I bought him some heroin. Oh, that's probably not part of the story. I bought him one of those Mexican wrestler masks.
Right.
And he started diving off three things 6 feet tall onto people.
Do you think they're extra upset about what's happening now with their parents? Maybe a little more violent?
You know what's weird? Because, and I've said this and even had people who know what a terrible husband I was and really pick Gretchen's side. I mean, I cheated. There's no way around that. Not just once and with people she knew. I couldn't be more horrible. I'm just the, as husbands go, that's as bad as you get, shy of beating them and maybe worse. Luckily, even drunk, I don't have the gene that hits girls. You know, there must be a gene because even when I don't remember where I've been, nobody reports I hit a girl. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just a line I guess some people don't even cross subconsciously, and thank God on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But people agree that in the divorce, I'm the good guy.
Mm. Even your kids.
Yeah.
Nice.
Alan Sachs, a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful lawyer that represented me, quit. He said, "You're too bad. It's bad for my reputation as a lawyer." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You don't want anything." I said, "I do. I do want things, but top notch. I don't want her to cry. I cheated. I caused this. I just don't want it."
Right.
And he said, "Well, I've got. There's a record they keep, like a tally sheet of how bad you got your ass kicked." And it's going to look like I got my ass kicked because you won't ask for anything. She says, "I want all this money," and you go, "Fine." I wrote a letter once and had it notarized that I'd like 5 pairs of jeans, all my shoes, and 10 shirts. And that's it. From all my homes, everything. That's what I wanted. And nobody would accept it. The judge wouldn't accept it. He said, "You're not allowed." Their lawyers wouldn't accept it. Said, "You're not allowed."
Yeah. I think there's a saving you from yourself part of the law. Or there's a part where we're going to go back and we're going to turn it over and say, come on, he wasn't in his right mind.
Well, now I've got this lady named Gail Cohen. I said, "I'm going to step out of your way." She does it because she loves the law. She loves family law. And everybody's going to get what's right. And then I'm not even going to ask any questions.
I wouldn't trust anyone who loved the law. Hey, speaking of the law, Chris.
Family law, different.
Oh, Chris.
Hey, Adam, what's going on?
What's happening?
Hey, so what's the deal? Did you ever get around to hitting that doobie on Friday night?
That's
or
right.
What?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah?
I got good and stoned on Friday night.
Did you throw your roach out and cause this fire in Malibu or what?
That would have harshed my mail.
Yeah, we're on our way to work right now.
I'm
down
just
to 71. It's windy as hell out here.
Smoking on a peach pipe.
Absolutely.
At Jimmy's and my buddy's bachelor party. Didn't know the pipe had a carb on it. Pipes
really?
Have carbs now.
Yeah, carbs are a big thing now.
You didn't know that?
Back in my day, bongs just had carbs on them. I know there's pipes with carbs, but I don't know. It seems unnecessary. Maybe that's me.
Make sure there's only Kush in there, though.
By the way, inspired by you, Adam.
Yes.
I also partook.
You smoked pot this weekend?
Went to the movies.
That's
but
excellent.
Because
yeah.
we live in walking distance, so we're like, let's smoke a little bit and walk to the movies.
All very right. nice.
I'm pulling up to the job site right now. I'll look forward to listening to you guys the rest of the day.
Good times.
Bye. All right.
All right.
See you, man.
Following up from Friday.
I like that.
Yeah, I went to a bachelor party on Friday night and got good and stoned on the party bus. Listen, when you're partying on the party bus and someone hands you a pipe filled with the Kush.
I didn't know what to
turn your
that.
Nose up at.
I was just excited when I said, hey, I think it's cashed. It made me feel cool.
Is what movie did you see, by the way?
I saw that George Clooney movie, Michael Clayton.
I heard that was very good.
It's pretty good. Plot's a little confusing when you're high.
Yeah.
How to start your car, how to find your car. Do you really like the guy you're with? And what should we eat?
No, we were walking over to the theater a little high, and then we looked at each other and we said, if anyone knew how happy we were, they'd kill us.
You know what? Good for you. We say that kind of stuff and we mean it, or at least till we fight again. I think that's really nice.
Yeah.
You've said a couple of nice things, but I'm the romantic guy. You know what I'll never, ever, ever forget?
What?
Adam's wife moving the seat to where he wanted it.
That was sweet.
Yeah.
Like that probably, I mean, it meant enough to you for you to say it.
Oh, yes.
But it meant enough to me that you had noticed it, that like there was somebody else that would go, all right, it's a little thing. It's not a big thing. It's not some overt romantic gesture. It's she remembered finally, hey, he likes that seat back. He's going to have to do this in the morning.
She was.
I'll never forget that.
I have a big issue with people that drive my car, borrow my car, and take my seat and move it all the way up. And then when I get in, I can't get in because the seat's all the way up. She borrowed my car and moved the seat all the way back.
Was Lynette worried about the fire?
Her dad lives in a place by Castaic where he was evacuated. So we had multiple people living in, or at least who had dwellings in multiple fire zones.
Right.
So she was focusing on her dad getting out. He was being forcefully evacuated from his place, going over to her brother's house, who was also in like Newhall, Saugust area, who was also in danger of being evacuated. So the house that nobody we knew lived in except for us and we weren't there came third on the list of things to worry about. I still have no idea if the fire, I don't think my house burned down. I don't know how close the fire got to it. But again, there's nothing I can do.
That was my second question. When I asked the question, I said one part was philosophical. Do you care? And the other part was I have your answer.
Hmm.
Your house didn't burn.
Why?
Nothing on that street burns. I checked.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I should have checked too. Look, here's the deal. The fire was going all through Malibu. It seemed like it was moving south and not north. My place is north, but the winds are crazy and embers go everywhere and who the hell knows. Again, it's a good philosophy to adopt, which is, fight like hell for things you can control, work very hard at things that have a pay a dividend. But if there's nothing you can do about it, then do not ruin your weekend. I feel this way a little bit as you get older in life. It's this way. This is what sports are. And I'll tell you what I mean. Not playing sports, rooting for a team. There's people that ruin their entire existence rooting for a team that doesn't win, or even when the team does win, it doesn't do anything. I mean, imagine if you're a lifelong Cubs fan.
Cubs. Dude, I live in Chicago.
Yeah, they haven't won anything in 90 years, okay?
It tasted like champagne.
If you're an 80-year-old diehard Cubs fan, you can look back on your life as a disappointment. Because the number one thing in your life was the Cubs winning the World Series, and they didn't win in your lifetime. I mean, replace the Cubs with anything else. Let's just say, forget the Cubs. Let's just say you spent your entire existence trying to get one woman, and you never got into her pants. Unrequited love. You loved little Becky Sue across the street your entire life.
You can barely stand the thought of it.
At 11 years of age, you were nuts for Becky Sue. And by the way, sports is even worse because it's pre-puberty. At least you weren't so into Becky Sue when you were 9, but you could be a diehard Cubs fan at age 9. And now you're 79 years old and you still never got, pardon the pun, to second base with Becky Sue. Or you wanted to own the house Becky Sue lived in across the street, or you wanted to be a doctor, or whatever it was. It didn't happen in your lifetime. That, to me, is a pretty sad life. I mean, forget about the Cubs. Let's just go Becky Sue across the street. And you'd be like, yeah, well, he used to wear his Becky Sue jersey every April, May, June, and July. He'd just be sitting there in front of the TV set watching Becky Sue's house. And one time he got to enter the entry hall. That's when they made the playoffs or something. But then they lost, and she slammed the door on him, and he had to go back to his house and masturbate feverishly.
That's Holy cow.
Thank you, Harry Carey. That is an entire life wasted, as far as I know. That's the way I look at it. So when you invest all your time and all your effort and all your concentration into something that you can't affect, mm-hmm. and into something that you're not going to share in, except for in a weird sort of very collateral way,
yeah.
You're not going to get any money. You're not going to get a ring. You're not going to be participating in. There's really nothing in it for you except for a life of being a Cubs fan.
Right.
My feeling, well, SC wins. Come on. My feeling is...
Red Sox even win.
Why do that? Why go through life that way? That means, like, I like the Rams, but the Rams are horrible, and I don't even care if they lose on the weekend anymore because I don't want to invest my life. I have a family. I have other activities. I have people I love. Why do it? And again, the house in Malibu is an investment. It is my house, but I can't alter the outcome of the fire, so thus I'm not going to ruin my weekend.
My question to you is this, then, because when for a second we were talking about fires times real estate value, and I led you astray going to Tokyo. It's really crazy, too. So I don't want to lead you astray again. But
go ahead.
When you say I don't want to wreck my day thinking about things I can't change, let's say you had unprotected sex with a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were
6 months
Friday.
From now,
yeah.
You had an HIV test.
Mm-hmm.
Would you sweat the results or go, there's nothing I can do about this?
I would sweat the results. I think when it comes to things like this, it's a matter of degree.
Okay.
There's people who couldn't answer the phone and would be home in a, just wrap themselves up in a sheet and get into a fetal position and couldn't go outside.
Right.
For me, I would be thinking about it, but you probably wouldn't know it. I could come in and do a radio show.
Oh, absolutely.
And you wouldn't know it.
That almost has nothing to do with it. That has to do with being a pro.
Well, thank you. But there's the people who...
No, I mean, I can do it too.
I mean, thank you. We all have things that are on our mind at any given time. We all have concerns. We all have issues. The question is, can you put those aside and do your job? Can you put those aside and do your job of enjoying your life?
That's an interesting question.
Like we all know, well, to a certain degree, whether you're waiting for an AIDS test to come in, or you know what's going on over there in Darfur, or you know what's going on with the atmosphere, or you know what's going on with fill in the blank.
Right.
There is a part of us that must put these things aside and enjoy our lives.
Yeah. It's difficult.
It's difficult, but it's a good example, and I would be concerned about it, but I would and I don't know a human being who wouldn't be concerned about the unprotected sex with the hooker 6 months earlier in the AIDS test. You've been talking to Kimmel, by the way. The point is,
no,
should
just my doctor.
Should have never had the cush. The point is it 10% concern? Is it 90% concern? Or even if it is 90% concern, does it ruin that day? Does it ruin your ability to be effective in that day?
Let's play some games.
All right. We need to take ourselves
a
break.
Game, man. Kind of neat one.
No, I was,
as
I'm into it.
No, as long as the judges hit his gavel on the not that interesting button.
I wish there was a way to measure that. I would be probably tend to be much less worried about it than most people, but not at that stage where I wasn't worried about it.
This is really personal, and if you don't want to answer, well, that makes you sound like you don't want to answer.
Well, go ahead.
In that position.
You can go ahead.
All right. In my day, we didn't worry about such things. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have anything you couldn't cure with penicillin, of which I was allergic to, so tetracycline.
Right.
But it took seconds. I mean, literally, all symptoms were gone that day.
Venereal disease. Yeah.
And any spreadable germ was gone in 72 hours top. Something just killed. That's all you had to worry about.
Right.
When I would worry about such things, I would definitely not have sex with another woman, especially if I was engaged, which I was almost always.
Mm-hmm.
I would sweat that for her. Right, so, well, you can't have sex with her, man. You're giving that big of a creep. You could be a cheater.
Right.
You could be stupid and have cheated unprotected in 1977.
Right.
Or you could be a stupid cheater unprotected in 1977 who went home and then had sex with his girlfriend before he even thought about it.
Right.
I'm the first two. I can handle not having sex with the girl until I know if a doctor tells me I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
That is some form of sweating.
Right.
Like, you got to hold back. You got to be different. But I could enjoy my whole day, but it's not a deathly disease. It's a Hyde disease.
Right.
Make sure she hasn't seen your underwear for 3 or 4 days, and you're cured.
Well, it's an interesting topic. I'm going to give it about 30 seconds, and then we're going to play our game. But we're living in a society that wants you to worry quite a bit about quite a few things.
Yes.
We don't know any shades of gray. We just know it's a death sentence or it's not. You know, AIDS is a death sentence. I've always sort of known that it wasn't, not for me, because I wasn't in a high risk category. So I go the opposite way and tend to worry less about things because I feel like the man is trying to ram his agenda up my tukai.
You're faithful to Kimmel, then.
I will, yes.
So that's why you're not high risk.
We'll get into something later on, but just an example of what we have to worry about. I was watching, I don't know if anyone watched 60 Minutes last night.
I did.
They had all this famine going on in Africa and all these malnourished kids, and the kids can't get sustenance in them, and they're all dying off. And somebody came out with this chubby buddy or nutty buddy stuff. It's a paste. It's made of peanut butter, powdered milk, and sugar, essentially. And they feed it to the kids, and it's like some kind of miracle drug. The kids snap right back into shape. All these malnourished kids that are on death's doorstep eat this sort of putty substance that tastes like peanut butter and sugar, and they immediately put weight on it, immediately brings them back. So these women wait in long, long lines to get to this peanut butter substance so that they can, so their kids can survive. And there's all these doctors over there that are taking care of business. But the guy, Anderson Cooper from 60 Minutes, is interviewing them, and he says, so every single woman comes in here, they bring in their kids, and they immediately start packing on the weight. And he says, what about peanut allergies? And he goes, they don't have it. And he goes, yeah, but so many people where I'm from, so many young kids have peanut allergies. And she's like,
no.
Not an option.
Oh, yeah.
You see, there you go. Not an option.
You know what?
Not an option.
You know what we don't have in Dufar and other parts of starving Africa? We have no aversion to finger sandwiches and tea.
Yeah, talk about a first world problem. Peanut allergy.
Peanut allergies. And I've been screaming about it for years, saying, where were all the peanut allergies when I was a kid?
So is it made up?
People have money there. Look, here's my whole point. We don't have real problems here. And we need to focus on real problems. So if we don't have any real ones, we'll create make-believe ones, such as peanut allergies. Yes, there are a couple of kids that'll go into anaphylactic shock here who have blue eyes. And if they eat peanut butter, they'll die. That's not they're not in your kid's school, but peanuts have been taken out of your kid's school. Every single one of these poor kids is devouring peanut butter, right, and not a one of them has an allergy. As a matter of fact, it's a non-issue. Of course, here...
Everybody, a good wind blows and you've got the flu and leukemia.
A bunch of attorneys would close down the place that dispensed the Nutter Butter, whatever the hell it is.
Watch me be a real pro and get us back on track while doing the same thing. Speaking of, we have no real problems here, totally untrue. Because I'm going to Blotto in the Grotto for my first trip, and I intend to cause a real problem.
And if you would like to go and see Danny causing a problem this Thursday night in the Grotto at the Playboy Mansion, you can call up right now at 866-901-ADAM. We'll play a round of Are You Smarter Than a Raiders Fan? Do we have? We have a tease?
Who is on the $10 bill?
Wish I knew. Who is on the $10 bill? We'll play a round of Are You Smarter Than a Raiders Fan next.
This is the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser. Program Director Jack Silver with a look at what's coming up in this morning's show.
It's Playboy Mansion Week, peeps! Or as the Jackman calls it, the High Holy Days! Today, you'll get a chance to win tickets at a new game called Are You Smarter Than a Raiders Fan? If you understand the words I'm saying right now, I'm going to go ahead and assume, yes, you are! The guy who played Bobby Bacala on The Sopranos, Steve Sharippa! Oakland Raiders linebacker Kirk Morrison! Also, Music Monday, This Week in Rage, and Saturday Night Live alum Dana Garvey! I'm not worthy! I'm not worthy! Party time! Excellent!
Thank you, Jack. 866-901-ADAM. This is the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, we were down at Camacho's a couple of weeks ago talking to some Raiders fans. Decided to bring along our little DAT recorder. Although if you tell a Raiders fan you're using DAT recorder, they go, I know you're using DIS recorder. And you go, no, DAT. And they go, yeah, DIS. And then you go, it stands for digital. And then he punches you.
That's fairly close.
I left
there bleeding. Mm-hmm. Thinking I needed stitches, but I didn't. From mm-hmm. that cut that's still there.
That cut?
Yeah, that cut right there. It's a digital cut. I was cut digitally. I had a Raiders flag stapled to my back just because I got a contact high from Raiders fans that were so insane. And they ran a contest who has the biggest Raiders tattoo. So I had their flag stapled to my back on stage.
Well, the thing about Raiders fans is there are Raiders fans, and then they're the ones who get kissed in because they're either over 300 pounds or have under 70 IQ. We hung out with quite a few of those. We want to know if you're smarter than a Raiders fan, and if you are, you're going to the Playboy Mansion with us.
Thursday.
Let me see. You want to pick someone, or do we have an opening you want to play? Let's play the opening.
You may not be smart. In fact, you may be an idiot. But are you smarter than a Raiders fan?
Well, let's just hop to the top and talk to Richard from San Dimas. Richard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, you know what? Would you promise not to get mad at me? San Dimas just kind of sounds stupid.
Yeah,
I know it's a nice place. Some really nice people come from there. But it's one of those... You know what sounds worse, though? We're speaking of Suzanne Summers. San Berdu.
Yeah.
It just sounds like you're saying it wrong.
Yeah. What was Suzanne Summers doing in San Berdu?
That's where she's from.
Really? Yeah, I had no idea. Short for San Bernardino, everybody. Hey, Richard.
Yes, sir.
San Dimas, where they have a water park there?
Yeah, they do. Raging Waters.
Good times.
Yeah, it's a blast if you're 11.
I'm gonna conduct a study. I think water parks or living in proximity to water parks lowers your IQ.
Is that right?
Something about the jostling with the chlorine exposure.
Yeah.
I'm going to look into it when I'm in charge. Hey, Richard.
Yes, sir.
You ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right. We had our first question. Now, it's best 3 out of 5.
All right, I'll do my best.
Here we go.
Who is on the $10 bill?
Who is on the $10 bill? You don't need to know, but you do need to know if the Raiders fan knows. Wait a minute, I screwed that up. You need to know. Sorry, you need to be smarter than a Raiders fan. All right, who is on the $10 bill?
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Points off because this was the tease.
We did tease it.
You had a whole
it.
Break to look it up.
And
I had a whole break to find a 10.
All you,
had a
yeah,
whole
all
break
you need to
look up currency.
All you need to do is pull out that wallet from your back pocket, uncoil the 30 feet of anchor chain that's kept on it. Ironically, the guys with the chains on their wallet have less in their wallet than the guys without chains on their wallet. It's interesting. Maybe it's overcompensation. Richard, what do you think?
I have no clue.
Just name any president.
Wait. What is the exact question? Who is?
Yes.
Who is on the $10 bill?
So the Raider fan will have to say the specific president.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. Jefferson.
All right.
Who is on the $10 bill?
Frank, Franklin Thomas?
Oh
no,
God.
I don't know.
bad times, Richard. You're 0 for 1.
I know.
All right. You ready to?
Do we care to tell anybody or just see?
Alexander Hamilton, or so it says here. I have no idea.
All right, good. I don't feel so bad.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
But to be fair, I don't know because I don't handle money. I'm so rich. I have a personal accountant. You've never seen $10, Richard.
That's correct.
But I don't like to handle money. I have to, but I do handle history. And he was one of the last big shots of a real live duel and shoot a guy at dawn.
He got shot in the nuts.
Yeah, okay. There you go. We'll give you a half a point for that.
Okay, bro.
All right, Richard, let's go on to the next question.
All right.
In Einstein's theory of relativity, E equals what?
MC squared.
Well, but the E part of it. What is that?
What is
that?
E?
What's the E stand for?
And if you say ecstasy, you can still go, but animal, are you?
He did complete the equation.
No, so what? That wasn't the question.
I know, but
E stands for
confusing
what?
Confusing wording a little.
All right, go ahead. All right, so... The E in the E equals MC square stands for what? What does the E stand for? Like, if my name was E Carolla, you'd go Eric Carolla,
right.
And would be a decent guess. E blank times mass times velocity or whatever the hell it is.
Cubed.
Right.
Not sure. Electricity?
Started with an E.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
And it's not entirely, if we wanted to be the most charitable people in the world.
We might be. Well, let's see what the Raiders fan says.
In Einstein's theory of relativity, E equals what?
Equilibrity?
To be fair, it was the third quarter and he'd had a few beers by then. Richard?
Yep.
It's energy. But I'm going to give that one to you for knowing the equation.
Yeah,
electricity,
that's fair.
Most people would.
Any of the nuts thing?
Say energy.
All right.
And a lot of things these days, they've replaced the word calories with energy. So they're really playing with that word.
You're one out of two. Let's see if you can go three out of five.
What is six times six?
Six times six, Richard, quickly.
36.
Right.
What is six times six?
Six times six is 48.
Oh, no. Wow.
Go Raiders.
I'm not that pleased. It's the end of humanity, man.
He probably was a product of the L.A. Unified School District, or what we called the black hole back in the day. All right, so now you're two out of... four, so correct? Yes, you're two out of four. Now, if you get this one, you're going to the Playboy Mansion, Richard.
All right.
I want you to stay far away from me and Teresa.
No problem.
Thank you.
But who is the current Secretary of State?
That's not the right answer.
Richard couldn't help himself from an expletive right there.
Richard just dropped an S-bomb. All right, now hold on a second. Richard.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
No cussing into the telephone.
I understand. I'm sorry.
All right. The current Secretary of State.
You have to use so many cuss words.
I'll give you a clue.
That's nice.
Secretary.
That's not nice.
That's a terrible clue.
Well, what I'm saying is, think secretary.
a decent clue. While
see,
sexist.
Because normally when
I'm
you think...
The rice.
Ooh, I am good. All right, let's see how the Raider fan did.
Who is the current Secretary of State?
It's not George Bush. It's probably like John Edwards.
John Edwards. Interesting.
Well, Richard, congratulations. You're marginally smarter than a Raiders fan.
Yeah.
But marginally dumber than a truck.
So hang on.
He's neck and neck with a fern.
We're going to see you coming up this Thursday at the Playboy Match. We have a little outro.
God, they're dumb. Are you? Find out next time we play Are You Smarter Than a Raiders Fan?
Well, that was fun.
It was fun.
Sadly, I didn't know most of the answers myself.
Well, I had one wrong. I was all happy to have Jefferson on my $10 bill.
Yes.
I was going to tell you how he's really a redhead. Nobody ever paints him as a redhead, and he had bright red hair. And it turned out to be Hamilton, the bastard.
Well, we all learned he got shot in the nuts.
Positive he got in the nuts. Positive he got in the lower abdomen.
We will take ourselves a break. We'll be back right after this.
The Adam Carolla Show and Miller Lite present Blotto in the Grotto.
Returns as dedicated as ever to one unholy purpose.
Thursday night, live at the Playboy Mansion.
Behind these walls, a world of madness and brutality within.
With Adam Carolla.
A living thing with the brain of an insane genius.
Teresa Strasser.
The female breast can be deadly.
And Danny Bonaducci.
Created from the bodies of the criminally insane.
Featuring Hugh Hefner.
Rising from his tomb.
The Deaf Rat Guy.
A terrifying story that could have happened to the kids in your neighborhood.
David Alan Greer.
Dracula's soul brother.
The Kardashian sisters.
All obsessed with the taste of flesh.
And a costume contest that could send you to Sin City for 3 days at the Planet Hollywood Resort, thanks to TravelWorm.com.
We have painted a bloody picture, but it is only a small part of what actually takes place in...
Blotto in the Grotto. Visit AdamCarolla.com to win tickets.
You will sit and watch this shocking ugliness.
And if you can't get in, listen to the broadcast Friday morning.
If you have a strong constitution, we challenge you to test it and sit through.
Blotto in the Grotto with the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, couple of thoughts. Not pertaining to Blotto in the Grotto, though we'll get to that later on. A few things. My dog, Molly, turns out to be a full-blown puss. I was a walking Molly on Friday in the evening when I got home from work. We're heading down the street. There's a friendly neighbor lady I've had multiple conversations with in the past. I stopped to say hi to her. We were standing at the end of her driveway, and a stray dog that she'd rescued from... It's funny, dogs come from bad neighborhoods, too. She looked at me after the dog ran down and pummeled poor Molly. Aww. She looked at me and said, I got him from Sherman Way. And that's a crappy street that if a guy grew up on Sherman Way, you'd think, oh, there's a badass.
Reseda and yes. Sherman Way.
Well, if a dog grew up, it was probably that badass's dog. This dog was about a third the size of my dog, Molly. This dog came running down the driveway before anyone could react. I just looked out of the corner of my eye, and this dog was on top of Molly. Molly rolled over, tucked her tail between her legs. I did not know that was possible. I've been staring at her a-hole for the last 3 years. I thought the one good thing that comes from this is the dog's tail will actually move down instead of up in the air like the Archie's dog's tail. But Shaggy, Daisy, what the hell is that dog's name? The point is Molly rolled down, got into a fetal position, tucked her tail between her legs and got her ass kicked by this dog that was at least a half to one third her size. The dog didn't do any damage. It was just all bark and scraping around.
You need to protect Molly.
No, but Molly folded like a burrito right in front of me and this owner, and it made me realize what a puss Molly was. And then later on, earlier that night, Molly jumped up, started barking, got, you know, started clawing at the window, and I was like,
puss.
Oh, you kidding? I've seen you in action. I've seen you in action.
Just rolled over.
Rolled over right onto the back, right in the submissive pose, and tucked the tail right between the legs so it wouldn't get what she had coming to her. And that
problem for you?
That was it. No, it's no big deal. It just I didn't know that the dog would go from like animal to sea sponge in a matter of seconds, like literally turned into, you know, teeth and growling and barking and pulling on the on the leash to just pure puss. No, it's the kind of thing where I don't think anyone wants to watch their kid strike out playing a Little League game. Right. And I don't think anyone wants to see their kid get punched out by a bully.
And they take it well.
Nobody wants to see their dog get their ass kicked by what's essentially a dog the size of a throw pillow that comes running down a driveway. But I'm not going to let it affect my masculinity too much.
Not your masculinity. The reason I ask is because if somebody came up and asked you something that you're normally good at and you didn't have the answer handy. As a matter of fact, I was very disappointed in my family last night. I showed Amy a game. I said, if you want to know who wrote a book, when and why, you call any member of my family. They'll all tell you. And tell you a lot about the relatives. So first I did it, and then I called my sister, and she goes, I don't remember, and hung up, like, why you're bothering me?
Right.
I was really disappointed, really
built
disappointed.
Them up. Yeah.
And I called my mom, but she's 86 now, so that's not fair. But I know that Adam is smart, and if somebody asked him a question he didn't know, he's still just as smart. He just didn't know that one thing. I also think of him as a boxing trainer and a big man. And if some guy the size of me came up and started growling at me, folded like a lounge chair, and it'd be a problem for me.
Yes.
It really would. I wouldn't. Our relationship wouldn't be the same.
I wouldn't want you to look at me the same, and I would feel the same as well. It's just I've managed to separate myself and my own ego from my dog, and maybe that's a problem. Maybe we don't. Maybe we have too much of that in our society. I mean, what I'm saying is whether we always hear about the starlet who's carrying her lap dog into first class and wants it to have priority seating over the handicapped person because it's her little muffin. That's her and her dog and not enough separation between them. But we also have the aforementioned gangbanger with the Rottweiler who wants the dog to be an extension of himself, and the dog is pummeling the toddlers who are getting into the yard or going down the street. Maybe it's healthy for us not to think we're our dogs or our dogs represent us. My dog's a full-blown puss.
Listen, that's cool with you.
And I'm cool with it. My dog was a little more of a badass. Don't get me wrong, but maybe we should all divorce ourselves from our dogs. And by the way, that way we wouldn't have to sue people over mental anguish that was caused our dogs when the vet said they were overweight or vice versa or whatever went on.
The reason I asked is because I'm separated from my dog. One of my dogs happens to be a badass, the German Shepherd, but that's not me here nor there to me. If I went out drinking with your buddy Ray, who I now consider my buddy Ray, I really like that guy.
Good guy, yes.
And if we went out drinking and somebody came up and gave me and or him a really hard time where it looked like we're either going to swing right now or any second, and somebody better make the first move or back up the guy who makes the first move, I would count on Ray 1,000%. And if I did and he folded, I'd never be his friend again.
Yeah, well,
because that's not who he's. That's not what I love about Ray. I love about Ray that five guys attacked his friend and he marched into a house all by himself. And if that turned out to he's grown up into a guy who would fold, I would never think about him the same way again.
He did.
I love that stuff about your pal.
I got beat up by five guys, and Ray went and right
marched
into the house,
man.
Looking for the five of them.
I want to kiss him right on the mouth for that.
And later found the guy who hit me with the baseball bat and got him in a headlock and dragged him into the bathroom I was in at a party. We will take ourselves a break. When we come back, the news.
Yeah, we'll talk a little about the wildfires, and also Bill Maher gets heckled live on his show Friday night.
Saw that. Take a quick break. Back with that next.
Ace team, and win tickets to Blotto in the Grotto Thursday night at the Playboy Mansion. And for Music Monday, we'll be playing the best and worst songs to hear as you enter the Grotto on Thursday. Phone line to the studio is 866-901-ADAM. Live across America, it's the Adam Carolla Show.
Hey, T-Bone.
Hey.
What's going on in the news, baby girl?
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news today.
At least a dozen California wildfires stretching from Santa Barbara to San Diego have forced Governor Schwarzenegger to declare a state of emergency for seven counties overnight. Santa Ana winds have been clocked as high as 60 miles per hour, have been fueling the fires. At least 35,000 acres have been burned. More than 1,000 firefighters are battling the flames. So far, none of the fires have been contained.
An acre is a weird parcel of space, and we need to really work out the acre. Because if you said to most people, how many acres do you think's in a square mile, they'd go, three? 3 million?
A bunch.
I had a house that was on a third of an acre once.
It
seemed big. Like, I have been trying to figure out how big an acre is for like the last 15 years, and now I've given up. And here's the problem with acre. It doesn't mean anything when you go 3,500 acres scorched. People go, that's bad.
But in the beginning, when they first started putting out that measurement, they'd say 3,000 acres burned. And you think, isn't that most of America? Isn't America on fire? 3,000 acres?
Yeah, I know. That's my point. And then also someone does that where you go, I got a ranch with 700,000 acres outside of Montana. And you go, wow, that's a medium-sized ranch? Big? I don't know. There's the point. Let's stop using acres. Or let's start putting, like, acre markers by the side of the road so I know.
Right. Fair enough.
Like, when I'm going 60 miles an hour, I'll pass them. It'll be like cards in the spokes of a bicycle. But just give me, you know, it would be actually nice. It would be nice for the ladies, especially.
Okay.
You know, they do that mile marker thing where you're right, just driving down the highway and it's like, this is 1 mile. And when you're driving your car, you get a pretty good idea of how far a mile is.
You can also run to that.
This
really
is
clear. You can jog to that.
This is 100 yards. This is an acre. This is how far. Now, acres cubed, but the point is this is how long it is to cover an acre. This is an acre if it was done in distance. Look, I was watching Entertainment Tonight, and they did this, like, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous thing, and this rich heiress chick was on, and she was in Milan, and she was on her yacht, and the guy said, how long's your yacht? And she said, it's 75 meters long. And I turned to my wife and I said, do you know how long 75 meters is? And she had no idea. If we had meter markers, acre markers, and other markers along the side of the highway, we could figure it out. Oh, it'd just be one stretch. And if you got confused, you just get in your car and go to that one stretch of highway and figure it out.
By the way, I did not get confused. I want you to know when I said I had a Hector once,
mm-hmm.
It was just a guy named Hector who mowed my acre.
Who, if and yeah, it would,
I just had like a Hector who would ride on the tractor.
75 hectares per acre.
Well, they'd only have to mow one stroke.
I think an acre's, is it 40,000 square feet?
An acre is
42,000 square feet, I think.
Right.
Something like that.
Well,
yes.
In Malibu, 2,200 acres were burned.
Mm. People love that, though. It makes us all feel better about ourselves because they go, even in Malibu, the celebrity houses, their money and their power couldn't protect them from the fire. We all go,
Pepperdine University evacuated, as you mentioned earlier.
Oh, the poor rich white kids, where will they go? Probably some going back as far as having to go home to the Palisades where they'll be confined to the rich stepmom's guest house in the back next to the outdoor pool.
Well, they say the fire is going to burn another 2 or 3 days and that it may have been started by downed power lines.
43,560 feet, so they say, so they tell me.
Is an acre,
yes. And I do like the downed power line one better than arson.
Yeah.
I think we all do. Same damage, just this one was caused by the wind and the other one would have been caused by a troubled teen. And I just like the idea that no person was behind this.
But did you know that arson is usually qualified as a sex crime?
Really?
Yep.
Because it has a fetish-like quality to it?
Mostly you will find, if you get there on time, or I don't really know that to be factual, but you will find that they are pleasuring themselves in a bush somewhere or some hiding place watching what they set on fire.
Mm.
It's usually a sex crime.
You mean unless, watching while they're doing something?
Unless they're burning the building of a person they hate. If they have a reason to burn something, then it's a certain kind of crime. If they have no reason, just wish to watch the flames, it's a sex crime.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Interesting. Makes sense.
Danny for
yeah.
Well, a fiery Bill Maher was almost forced to administer a beatdown while hosting his HBO show Real Time with Bill Maher Friday night.
I didn't see that.
During the live taping, a rowdy audience member who'd smuggled in a sign reading 9/11 is a cover-up fraud began yelling 9/11 conspiracy theories. After ignoring the first couple interruptions, Maher finally cracked.
See, this is the problem sometimes with government.
Hey, do we have some security in this building? Or do I have to come over and pick this guy's ass out of here? Could you get the out of my building? Hey, 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 out, 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 out.
You want to hear some more?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, a second heckler also made it into the building.
I'll kick your ass out of here, too.
What's the issue?
Hey, this isn't the Iowa caucus, okay? It's not a debate. It's a debate between us. You're in the audience. Audience comes from the Latin to listen.
Close enough.
He's feisty, that Bill Maher.
Yeah. Do you remember we were listening to, I don't know, it was a senator, whoever it was a government official, and they asked something they didn't like about Hillary Clinton? When he said, I'll kick your ass out, you could hear in the microphones that man was marching forward towards the people he was talking to.
Right.
Somebody was going to get heaved out of his office by that man.
Right.
I can tell by that tape, Bill Maher never left his seat and was never going to kick anybody's ass and is yelling for security. I don't see any big, all of a sudden I'm a bigger Bill Maher fan than I was, and I am. But the guy that gets up and says, hey, I'll kick your ass right now. Throw you out of my studio. That big celebrity that takes that chance, I like that guy a lot. And I don't see Bill Maher getting
He actually did get off the stage.
He did. Listen.
Yeah, he went into the audience and personally helped security.
I would agree. I would have agreed with you normally.
It didn't sound like
but
it.
I saw it. He I was didn't. Mic'd. He was well mic'd.
I heard the mic pull, which changed my mind a little.
Whoever mics Huell Hauser for California's Gold evidently doesn't work on the Bill Maher show. He got up and he kind of charged at him. Now, here's the thing, because we've all had this happen. You get empowered when you're up on stage.
Right, for sure.
And you also feel like everybody in there is in your gang.
Right.
They're all Jets, and there's one crazy shark who's standing up holding a sign that says 911 was a conspiracy.
West Side Story, not sports for you guys.
Thank you. So, you guys...
Tell me about all these rocks.
Yes, not San Jose in New York, but West Side Story. You know that... By the time you get to the guy, there'll be 75 other guys in your gang. They're there. Plus, the security was sort of meeting him. Plus, the guy looked like one of those malnourished, you know, conspiracy theorist guys. But when you get up on stage, you do produce testosterone.
Yeah.
There is a theory that women are attracted to guys up on stage or in a position of power because guys start producing testosterone. And so even when... diminutive stoners like Bill Maher get up on stage, they get kind of puffed up, but he did go after him.
I grant that I take a little of it back, but from the sound of it, he didn't get there till that young man was surrounded by security.
It was hard to tell who was security and who wasn't, but the point is the guy wasn't going to do anything. He was a spindly tree hugger, or I don't even know what he was, but he looked like one of those malnourished guys that's either super left or super right or super insane. And Bill Maher, by the way, a feisty guy.
He'd break like a bag of glass.
A pompous guy, but kind of a fun guy.
Love him, but...
And as we were talking about earlier, smokes copious amounts of weed when I did some sort of charity with him over at the Improv on Melrose some years ago, as I've famously told the story before. I was going to go up on stage in the middle of this charity in amongst all these really good stand-ups who'd been doing their really funny stand-up acts. And I said to Bill, what am I going to do? I don't have a stand-up act. And he said, we'll do Loveline. You be you. I'll be Dr. Drew. We'll just go take questions. I said, well, I don't know how that's going to go over in front of this crowd that's come to see stand-up and has been watching people do their polished stand-up routines for a tight 8 minutes. And then I'm going to walk up there and go, hey, what's going on? Can we bring the house lights up? Who's got some questions? He said, I think it'll work. I said, Bill, I'm not so sure it will. I said, why don't we talk about it and try if we can work out a few beats before I head up on stage? He said, fine. He said, let's go up front. We'll work out the beats. I said, fine. We walked out of the club. We walked down Melrose about 80 feet. Bill blew a joint, and we didn't talk about it. And we turned around and walked back in. And I thought, oh, I see. You wanted to get stoned. I thought we were going to talk about what we're going to do on stage. Now it's worse for me because I have a stoned Bill Maher, and we've still not had the conversation. But it ended up working out fine anyway. I ended up bringing it.
I
just thought when you think you're going to work out anything with somebody, like whether it's a business thing, whether it's a comedy thing, or whether it's how to land a jet airplane, whatever it is, when you think you're going to go have a conversation about something you're nervous about, you watch a guy smoke a joint and then walk back in, it's not good. Like if you said, hey, Ted, these are huge clients we have in that boardroom. We have one chance to impress these guys. Now, this could be our one meeting. You know, these guys flew in from Tokyo, and you went, why don't we go outside and really make sure we know what we're talking about for 5 minutes? And Ted just blew a joint, and then you walked back in. You would not feel more confident when you walked back into the boardroom.
Certainly not.
That's the way I felt. God bless Bill Maher. Where were we, T?
Well, Bill Maher started yelling at his security guards to not go easy.
Thanks to the bombs. How come I don't fire my audience department is really the question that's running through my mind. Right? Yeah, don't be gentle with them. Ass kicking is what's called for. If this was a microcosm of America, I'd vote for Rudy Giuliani at this point.
No. Things you should know about Bill Maher. Funny guy, nice guy, pompous ass.
Right.
Pompous ass. Smart and good and is aware of it. Kind of a prick to people he works with.
I was just going to say, I liked how he handled himself until he threatened to fire his audience department.
Oh.
That was a little rough.
You know, when you are doing a show, you are sort of hyper-vigilant, and 1 minute seems like 1 hour, and when something keeps happening, you do have a way of... It's happened to me a few times.
You also have a responsibility to the other 299 people in that audience. He's using their time.
Right.
Yeah, and if something is... When you're up there on stage and something is bothering you, you do want to. I had a, this maybe is just me, but I assume everyone has this component. The entire time I did Loveline on MTV, the TV show, I did about 350 episodes. They give you a mic pack. The mic pack clips onto the back. In the smaller your back, onto your belt, in the back of your pants. You can put it in your pocket, but normally they put it right in the back of your pants. And then the cord, they give you 11 feet of cord. I don't know why, because to make it from your ass to just under your neck or just under your chin is about 2 feet. But anyway, they give you 11 foot of cord. They have to wrap it around stuff. But the point is they give you the mic pack. And then they give you the clip-on lav mic. The way Loveline would work is we would go out, say hi, and Dr. Drew and I would sit down and we'd talk about whatever was on my mind, just like this show, for about 5 minutes. And then we'd bring out our first guest. Right. And when we brought out the first guest, we would stand up and greet them when they came in, shake their hands, just to try to be cordial. Every single time I would get up off my chair and stand up, the mic, because I sat down, slid off and I would feel the tug of the mic cord from the inside of my shirt yanking on my shirt because the mic pack was now swinging behind me because it popped off of my belt. I said about 100 times to the sound guy, hey, folks, we should be able to fix the problem where the thing pops off. We never could. Eventually, I wrapped tape around the thing, pulled the clips off, bent them the opposite way, put it back, and fix it myself.
That's the answer, by the way, except they professionally make what you made. You reinvented something they actually make. It's essentially an ace bandage with a pocket.
Yeah, put that on girls.
We did. No, what I did, and yes, the ace bandage with the pocket works, too. It's like a little money belt that you put it in. I popped the two little clips out of the thing, bent them the opposite way, so when I popped it back, the thing snapped super tight, and I wrapped a little gaffer's tape just around the little tongue clip part so it had some friction. The point is when I would step up after the 28th conversation I had with the sound guy,
right,
when Snoop Dogg would come around the corner and I would stand up, hey, Snoop, and I would feel the thing tug at my shirt. I think, I'm going to effing kill this guy. I'm going to kill him. I would see like red, like then I would be bothered. Like I want to interview Snoop Dogg, but I'm so PO'd that this mic is swinging between my legs that we've talked about it 20. So I do understand that thing of you're on stage, you're doing your job, something's bugging you. It's not being taken care of.
I wish you were dead.
And you see red. Now, with me, I had a history. This kept happening. So when it would happen, I would go come off the stage and I would just be like ballistic. I don't know if this is happening to Bill Maher before. But either way, I understand the PO'd on stage.
Sure, because it's you that looks stupid and it's you whose focus gets thrown. And the sound guy, nobody sees his face. They don't know who he is.
Right.
I'm kind of lucky. I could be heard in Nebraska without actually being mic'd. My voice is just sudden. It actually bleeds into the videotape. And you can pour it back out.
Again, the greatest one they used to do to me on Loveline that would drive me absolutely effing. I would throw a major tantrum on this one is they would hold up a cue card with the caller's name and just say, Kim, 18. And I would just punch and it'd say line two and I'd punch it up. Except for Kim spelled their name K-Y-M.
Right.
So I'd go, Kime, line two, Kime, Keem, what's the problem? And she'd go, it's Kim. And I'd go, would you write Kim on the cue card? It's not on the Chiron. Nobody can see it. You're holding it behind the camera. K-I-M. And they would go, but this is how she spells it. And I'd go, I don't care how she spells it. K-I-M.
It's not like you're giving out her phone number and a digit is wrong.
Right.
It's letters that they'll never see.
And then the very next show, well, Mark, who spelled his name M-O-R-K, would come up and it would be, I'd be like, Mark, it's Mark. And I would just sit there and think, kill this person. That's what happens. Things get repeated. You get in an intense situation. You go berserk. And then I would go yell at the guy. And you know what he'd say? But that's how he spelled it. That's all you need to know about life, everybody. Sorry, T.
No problem.
I'm sorry. That's I'm PO'd. Okay. I'm back to those
Shall
days.
I continue?
Yes.
I'm glad you mentioned Mark. Because here's a story about Mark Anthony. Mm. That's Mark, M-A-R.
Not interested.
M-A-R-C. Mark Anthony, as in Jennifer Lopez's man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's been rumors about her pregnancy for a long time, but Mark Anthony caused a stir when he made a revealing song dedication to his wife. He said, it's a real personal song. This song has a whole new significance. Then he launched into the song Faithfully by Journey. Now, I've pulled for you a little bit of the Journey version of the song because I think this is the part that he wants us to interpret.
They say that the road ain't no place to start a family.
See?
The road ain't no place to start a family.
Right.
Good place to get oral, though.
Definitely.
Highway run.
Like on the highway or while driving?
On it or on
either
it.
Either way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, I will just get to this.
So quickly. Mark Anthony is sending a message.
I think he's communicating through the majesty of song.
That
she is indeed pregnant.
I see.
I'm expressing my inner anguish through the majesty of song.
As far as the road not being a good place to start a family, the last broad he got pregnant, he hit the road. When the kid popped out. Just about the time the kid crowned, I think he was out of there.
But to be fair, he was four.
But you got to remember, it's always in the lyrics of the song. You know, that you have the first kid during the first semester just to get with her and get in the first trimester. As long as one's old enough to be taken care of, then you can bail. Now, this one was still in the tummy of the last girl.
He split. He was married to, like, Miss Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and, Dayanara Torres.
And then they broke up, and then he remarried her, which is always a blowhardy, retarded move, never works out kind of move.
People
and,
keep telling me that about Gretchen. Don't worry, maybe someday. I said, I'd rather burst into
yeah,
flames.
That's Liz Taylor territory
now. I loved
her
so much once, but that's that.
The fact, I do believe he dumped her shortly after she gave birth. I don't know if the umbilical cord was cut or not, but the kid didn't make it to one before he was out of there. T, do you know anything about that?
I only know that he still had amniotic fluid on his hands the first time he hugged J-Lo. And it kind of wiped it on the back of her shirt.
He was wearing surgical scrubs.
Britney Spears and the fried chicken skin on the vest.
Right, same exactly. Thing.
He handed her manager a cigar, said it's a boy.
Listen, very nicely done.
Allegedly. I will just close with this. Do you know where the least attractive people are in America?
Yeah.
You might know,
say,
Danny.
I do know.
This is according to a survey from Travel and
DMV,
Leisure.
The DMV?
Travel and Leisure. They interviewed 60,000 Americans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what city?
What city has the least attractive residents?
Okay. Now, it's got to be a city we all have heard of.
Oh, yeah. It's a big, big major city. Mm-hmm. Danny's especially heard of it.
We got to think Danny's heard of it. It's in Arizona somewhere. No. See, I don't think here's the thing. I got to think cold weather.
Yes.
Oh, Chicago? I got to think
holy cow.
Some of the chicks are a little corn-fed.
You have to think cold weather, but you can't think metropolis. So it's like a place like New York gets cold, a place like Chicago gets cold. On the other hand, these are professional women who have to look their best. I would say somewhere like Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Cow.
Not bad.
Good guess.
I'm going with Detroit, Michigan.
The answer? Philadelphia.
That was my other guess because I was born there. But I thought I knew what Detroit was.
Just edged out Washington, D.C., Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, and Orlando.
Well, I wouldn't have thought that. I wouldn't have been surprised at Philly.
Yeah. Or Orlando.
Yeah. Anything like I do.
And what do they, how do they figure out how ugly you are?
I guess that's subjective.
No, it's not anymore.
Just
theoretically.
People.
Theoretically, they've broken down what beauty is.
Mm-hmm.
Having seen it on TLC or...
I know there's a science and a symmetry and all that, but do they do that with everybody?
No, they just ask people, you know.
Is your girlfriend ugly? Yeah, okay, it's one.
They ask tourists who visit a city, how do you rate the attractiveness of the people in the city?
Oh, I see.
So it's not the most scientific.
But also one of the easier cities to get laid in.
Philly.
Yeah. You get me a city full of ugly chicks, it's like being in a woman's prison. You're bound to get some.
How about the most attractive people? Which city?
Now, that's in the United States.
Yes.
I'll just go, and it seems leading, so I'm probably wrong, but I'll go Los Angeles, Hollywood.
I'll say a city like, I'm going to go somewhere, and I'm going to like more of a Phoenix or a, maybe Dallas.
Miami.
Miami.
Was named the city with the most attractive people, just beating out San Diego.
That's why Orlando was a weird one.
I know. Well, it just beat out San Diego, Charleston, Austin, and Honolulu.
Mm. By the way, the people of Miami that I know, and I don't mean the city, I just mean the few people that I know besides my best friend Paul, if you're listening, are so red hot. It's that whole roller skating on the beach and a thong on their bodies are perfect. But for the most part, they are scum. South Beach, it sounds bitchin', but it's one of the scummiest places I've ever been.
Would be tough position if you were like the mayor of San Diego and you're like, we're in the running for the best looking city in the United States, but they're two fat chicks you have to talk to. Listen, we need you to clear out.
We're so close.
Just until the census guy's done. Here, look, here's a gift certificate to like IHOP. Here's some vouchers for a cab. Just go circle the airport for like 48 hours, and then we'll let you back. Once we get you, it's a technicality. We just need you to physically cross over into Mexico. And by the way, you'll be worshiping as a goddess over there.
Yeah.
Go over to Tijuana, have a few margaritas on me, and just come back in 24 hours just until the census
guy leaves. Is over.
Good news and bad news for our listening audiences. The smartest people, top three, Seattle, Minneapolis, and Boston. Bottom three, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Miami.
Wow.
Mm.
Boston Red Sox going to the World Series to face the Rockies on Wednesday. I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Tomorrow's news. Today, Teresa Strasser.
you, CNN.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
One of the dumbest cities.
Yeah, Los Angeles.
I don't speak Spanish.
Las Vegas and Miami, where the people are the best looking.
And the smartest cities?
The smartest were Seattle.
In order?
Yeah, top three, Seattle, Minneapolis, and Boston.
Boston,
well,
Seattle,
Boston's
I
filled
get.
With colleges. It's got Harvard and...
Boston has a smarter breed of guy over there. Even the blue-collar guys are super smart
but
in Boston.
They sound stupid.
They sound stupid, but they're wicked smart over there. Seattle, by the way, we just went number one in Seattle.
They are smart.
Oh, did we?
So we are...
That's nice.
Now, let me put this out
listeners.
Number
one city on my list of places to retire. I have a short list that gets longer now that I'm divorced. Seattle just made the top list.
What are you saying, Adam, to our Seattle listeners?
Well, let's just do some math. Let's forget about our radio show.
No, but all right, if you say so, boss.
Let's just think it was another radio show we were talking about. So that radio show was number one amongst the citizens of the smartest city in the world. In the country. And always, although I look at us as the best in the world.
Me too.
And trying to get some traction in a city that has the dumbest people in the country. Should we dumb it down?
Well, I've got a theory if that's a real question. Uh-huh. I had this conversation with you in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. When I first started here, and I saw the way Adam worked, and I thought, who have we replaced? What show are we trying to do? Adam's really trying to bring up the level so he can live with himself and have some integrity. And then if he doesn't mind, I'll throw in a good fart joke every now and again and keep it, you know, so people will vibe what it is.
Some for Seattle and Los Angeles.
Exactly.
Right. It's like Shakespeare.
Remember him saying it would take a couple of years. If they just give him a couple of years, the smart show, the people that want to listen to it will take over. And I remember when all of a sudden we started hitting number one in markets really fairly fast. And I thought, if he's right, the minimum is 2 years. And he's probably not right. So I guess in some weird way, I owe you an apology.
What is 6 times 6?
6 times 6 is 48.
Here's the thing. Thank you. Good for us. But the thing, to be fair about Los Angeles, they can no longer use Los Angeles as a polling place anymore because it's half Spanish speaking.
Right.
I mean, you can't say, you know, the average American or the average IQ or the average anything. This is Mexico. You're not, I mean, it's unfair to speak to Los Angelinos about anything because if someone asked me a whole bunch of questions about Mexico, I wouldn't score very well.
Right.
Los Angeles is essentially half Mexico now, so we should no longer be included in any testing, any standardized anything anymore. It's no longer our culture.
How about Miami?
What do they got over there, Cubans?
Yeah.
They're
in the bottom three.
They're like Mexicans who can swim. All right. That's the way I look at it.
All right.
T?
Yeah.
You want to put a bow on this one?
That's it. I did. I think the bow is
tomorrow's news. Today, Teresa Strasser. You, CNN.
The number one morning show in the smartest city in the country.
Feels good, doesn't it?
You know, it all feels good. That's where my agent lives.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God bless him. Yeah. I know.
I signed a week ago.
As I've said, I love Seattle, and I don't want to move to Seattle because I feel like I would be playing my last round in life. You need that carrot on the stick that dangles out in front of you going, one day I'm going to move to Seattle, and I'm just going to write a novel. You move to Seattle, you move there too early. You're essentially saying, I'm coasting from this point on.
But you got to remember, I've been a member of the Screen Actors Guild for 44 years. I'm ready to, until I had to split my money in half, I was getting ready within the next 2 years to say, okay, I'm not going to work this hard anymore. And now I'm doing everything I can to stay here where the money is for me, so I won't be coasting in Seattle for another 5 to 7 years.
Steven Sharippa,
I kill my wife.
As Bobby Bacala. From The Sopranos is on the show. I don't know what he's plugging. Maybe I know they're rerunning the entire last season of The Sopranos on HBO.
A new TV series about food.
Got a new TV. All right. We'll talk to Bobby Bacala next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser from the final season of HBO's The Sopranos.
Second prize in a beauty contest, collect $10.
A German shepherd shaved his asshole, won first prize.
Oh, I'm not talking like that.
It's okay, Bob.
Stay out of it. The Sopranos. You go too far.
Steve Shariva on the Adam Carolla Show.
Steve, great to speak to you.
How you doing, Adam? How's everything, baby?
Doing good. Say hi to Teresa Strasser and Danny Bonaducci.
How are you, Danny? How you doing, man?
What's up, buddy?
Everybody good?
One of the most likable characters in Sopranos history. Bobby Bacala. You just love the guy. I know he's a mobster, but you just love the guy with his train set and his fat son and all that good stuff. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, just heard a little static. First off, do you enjoy Bacala?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a great character. You know, I started out, I came on the second episode of the second season, you know.
Right.
I just came on as a recurring character. And as the years went on, I got more and more and more stuff to do. The character was great. They wrote me incredible stuff. I mean, the writers are great. And then you become, the star of the show and the boss's brother-in-law. So it's not too bad, you know.
And it's a great marriage because your character name is an Italian dish, and now you're doing a cooking show.
Well, salted codfish, which I'm not that fond of. That's yeah. Bacala, you know.
Actually, that's not that bad.
It's not that bad, but it's like, if there's other things to eat, it's bad. Exactly. If it's the only thing to eat, it's not that bad. My mother-in-law, God bless her, passed away about 6 months ago, who was from Italy, made the bacala every Christmas.
And it smells bad. It smells bad.
So far, you're doing a great job at pumping your cooking show. It's not so good, and it smells bad.
Well, you know, I got this show on Life School, and it's a different kind of cooking show. I'm not a great cook, but I go around to some of my favorite restaurants in New York, And each episode, it's 9 episodes. Each one is a different dish. There's Sunday sauce, there's lasagna, there's Italian pastries, there's pizza. And I go to some of the best restaurants and cooks, real chefs and just good cooks throughout New York City. I interview people in the street from all walks of life, black, white, Pakistani. A Hasidic Jew spoke to me on camera, which they never do, about Italian food. So it's kind of entertaining man on the street plus informative. So it's a lot of fun, man.
The Jews have a lot of food range.
Yes.
Because they make some of the yummiest food in the world, and they make some of the most god-awful food in the world. Like, there's nothing better than a pastrami or corned beef sandwich with the coleslaw and with the brown mustard. I mean, there's nothing. The Jews make food that no 3-year-old would ever turn away. It's greasy, it's fatty, it's chewy, it's great. And then they make stuff that's bizarre.
Like you go, you go to the Seder or whatever, there's stuff there you have no idea what it is.
Oh, I would not want to. You do that gefilte, I'm done. But the thing is, when you're talking about that, here's how you know Adam's right, that the Jews make some of the best food in the world. The pastrami on rye is now so popular, the first thing that pops in my mind is now not Jewish, just pastrami.
Right.
When you say lo mein, I think Chinese food. When you say spaghetti, I think Italian food. You say pastrami on rye, I think delicious. That's how you know you've made it over past.
That's how you've made it. But it's everywhere now. But you get pastrami sandwich not just in a Jewish deli like years ago. Right. Now pastrami's very mainstream, right?
I know, but the goyim put it on a Kaiser roll and F
it
up.
Yeah,
let me explain something.
And then the guy behind the counter wants you dead.
Yes, the Jews understand nuance. They really do. See, when you go by the rye bread, that the goyim makes, it's 3 inches thick. And you end up just chewing it like cud. The Jews do the thin cut rye bread that soaks up the fat from the pastrami.
Now in LA, there's good deli.
Oh,
Cantors.
No, we got good Jews here.
Yeah.
Steve, speaking of good Jews, I don't know if you remember, but you and I competed on Pyramid.
Yeah, I remember.
Donny Osmond.
That was great.
You're very good at that game.
Teresa's people built the pyramids, and then you guys competed on it.
It's tougher than it looks.
So
Pyramid was a hard one. I just did Wheel of Fortune. You know, they did like a celebrity Wheel of Fortune.
With Drew Carey?
That's hard, too. No, that's Price is Right.
Oh.
But that's a hard one.
Whatever. Pat Sajak.
Stephen Chiripa is on the phone. Bobby Bacala, of course, from The Sopranos. So, a couple of questions. I know they're going to start rerunning the last season of The Sopranos on HBO. And by the way, I've said this many times. If you want to get high and go to the movies or get high and watch The Sopranos every weekend, you'll be able to enjoy it a second time a year from now when they air it again. You can go see the movie on DVD or you can watch The Sopranos second season, or I should say last season, a second time because you were high the first time and remember nothing of it. I wish I had done that, but I'm going to watch. What's going on with The Sopranos as far as the movie goes? Is there talk about that?
I don't think there'll ever be a movie. I honestly don't think that was never the intention. I mean, I don't know what happens 5 years from now, but at this time, there is no talk of a movie. Jim, I don't believe, wants to do a movie. I don't think David Chase wants to do it. I mean,
Gandolfini.
I think it's just over, man. Yeah.
Right. No, I can dig it, and artistically, everyone wants to look forward, not look into a rearview mirror. But on the other hand, you take a show like Sex and the City, was a popular show. Same show as The Sopranos, really.
Sex in the City got whacked.
They did the whacking. It was around. It was around for a while, and then it went away. Now they're shooting a movie, and people will be happy. Fans of the show will be happy when the movie comes out.
You know what Gandolfini wants, though? He wants to be the permanent guest on Stephen's cooking show. He's supposed to sit at the table and be fed and say, that was good.
Well, David Chase...
The Sex and the City thing was different. So many characters from the show are dead, you know.
Right.
I don't know. What do you do, a prequel? I mean, how does that all going to work
out? Yeah, prequel.
Hey, even if they did it with just who was left at the end of the show,
maybe,
I'd watch it.
You never say never, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Stephen Chiripa, let me tell you what my plan is for The Sopranos, and tell me what you think of this.
All right.
First off, be honest. Everybody in the cast would love to do another season except for Gandolfini.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And look.
Okay, you're right there.
Okay, and God bless you for being honest. And it's no big deal. Look, these are actors.
Well, who wouldn't want to do it?
Right.
I mean, first of all, it's great material. We're all good friends. You're going to have a nice big paycheck. I mean, who doesn't want to do it?
Look, I just want to... praise you for your candor, because most actors do that thing where it's like, well, we all decided to move on, and Gandolfini speaks for whatever. No, everyone in the cast wants to do another season except for one guy.
Another season, another two, another three.
Right.
We had a great time doing it.
Great time, great money, great
Absolutely.
Entertainment, and everyone watching wants
Absolutely.
Another season.
If you're going to be on one show as an actor, that's the show you
Exactly.
Want to do.
It's like, you know what, it's great. Here's the thing. A lot of actors want to do features, but they want the consistency and the money of doing episodic television. So they just take the money and they lose a little street cred. When you're on The Sopranos, you get the consistency and the money of the episodic TV and the street cred
of being Sopranos
of
Listen,
doing features.
Adam, it's like playing for the Yankees if you're a baseball player.
Yes.
Every baseball player wants to play for the Yankees.
Well, I floated this to Phil Leotardo a few months back when he was on this show. His name escapes me right now.
Frank Vincent,
the great Frank Vincent. And he agreed, and I want you to pitch this. And I feel like if you and Frank Vincent get together and pitch this to the network, it'll work.
Okay.
You do another season of The Sopranos. It is exactly the same with the same characters, the same writing. It's just it's just as if you're doing an eighth season. Is it eighth?
Yeah.
Eighth season of The Sopranos. Minus James Gandolfini, plus Ted McGinley.
He's in every show.
Ted McGinley takes over for Gandolfini. You call him. You don't call him Ted McGinley. You call him Tony or Tone or T. Everything's exactly the same. It's just like you took a script from season three and told Ted McGinley, you're playing Tony Soprano. His wife... Everybody recognizes him, Tony. It would cause stirs, shockwaves through the TV world.
Shockwaves.
It'd be the only thing people were discussing.
That's it. That's not a bad idea.
That's what I thought was happening.
Can you pitch that to Chase, please?
I don't think Chase wants to come back.
Thursday, I'll tell him.
Oh, really? He's got a book coming out.
I think Sopranos got it. I think the DVD comes out tomorrow for this last 9 episodes, and I think there's a Soprano book out.
Right. Yeah. He comments on the ending and how the fans didn't like it. He seems pretty bitter about it.
I don't think he's bitter. I just think it is what it is. There was no secrets. There was nothing hidden. What you saw, nothing hiding. What right. you saw is what you got.
I'll tell you what you need to do, Stephen Chirippa.
Okay.
Ply him with a little port. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Sit down and have a little after-dinner drink with him. And then
I should push this Ted McKinley.
Well, again, don't jump. Don't shove it down his throat. You know, okay. You go, hey, man, I was watching an old episode.
Should I say that you suggested it? Or
well, no. Let's have him keep drinking. Have him keep drinking. And then you go, hey, I was watching Nick at Night. I caught old episode of Happy Days, one of the later season ones. You know who's solid?
Yeah, all right.
Ted
you know what?
McKinley.
I think he
did some good work on that show.
What has he been on?
He
I don't know who he is. I'm pretending I do, but I don't.
He shows up. Well, that's why I have that puss on. He shows up at the end of every successful TV show run.
Married with Children.
He showed up. He was the next neighbor husband from Married with Children.
Uh-huh.
He
okay.
was the next guy who showed. He was the last guy that showed up on Happy Days. He was in Revenge of the Nerds. I think he also showed up at the end of Love Boat.
Everybody showed up at the end of Love Boat.
He's the relief pitcher. He's the guy in the bullpen in the eighth inning you go to. Get McGinley, get him out
but
here.
But he's a middle reliever because he doesn't have the heat to close.
No, but he's right. What he is he's the grown-up Ricky Siegel or Cousin Oliver.
Back in the day.
Did he take over for John Ritter?
Oh, Three's Company?
No.
No, 10 Things About Your Dad I Hate or whatever. No, that's a different guy.
All right.
Gotta look that up. But look him up. You'll recognize him in a second.
I already know exactly who you are.
All right, so Stephen, float that.
All right.
At lunch, and I'll give you a plug. Now, where do we see Steve Chirippa's Hungry?
Well, it's on Life School, December 6th. It's a Life School network. It's a new network. Also, I'm doing the Las Vegas Comedy Festival. I'm hosting a show November 14th, Vegas Vavoom. I got showgirls. We got a band. It's kind of an Ed Sullivan type with all these wacky variety acts.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Old school.
I'm a part of that. That's going to be
is Vavoom the name of the club or the name of the show?
The name of the show is Vegas Vavoom. It's November 14th. It's part of the Las Vegas Comedy Festival. It's at Caesar's Palace.
At Caesar's Palace. Okay,
it's
cool.
It's going to be great. The day before, I'll be in town with Gandolfini. We have a Soprano slot machine coming out.
Good times.
So we'll be unveiling that, and we'll see how that does.
Life School, that's SKOOLTV.com is where you go for more information. Stephen, thank you very much.
Good talking to you guys.
Bye, Stephen.
See you soon.
Did you find Ted McGinley?
Yeah, I know exactly who he is now. He has been on a million shows.
A good-looking blonde man. Mm-hmm. I think he's got the chops to handle the Gandolfini role. She's looking at the wrong guy?
No, she's not looking at the wrong guy. She's looking at the way you described him. Doesn't sound right. Isn't he much older now?
I said he's a good-looking blonde man with the chops to handle.
Can he play a mobster, really?
He could play
anything.
First,
I need you to be a mafia chicken.
The guy, I feel like I'm taking crazy.
The guy was on Love Boat. He played the king of the Delta House who hated the nerds.
I mean, to hang with the actors on Love Boat, you have to be a thespian.
Oh, my God. Mm. Yes.
I get it.
For Christ's sake, the chick that played Julie McCoy was a tour de force.
I know.
She was a tour de blow. She was a tour of lines. You say cruise line, you were talking to her.
He was on Happy Days. He was on Married with Children. By the way, the actor who played the original neighbor on Married with Children, married to the neighbor chick, who quit after season one to go back to the Builders Emporium and work the plumber's aisle. Yeah. I don't know what he got back into, but there was another 8 or 9 years of... the point is everyone is just hammering residual checks except for that one guy. All right, we need to... He became a park ranger, I'm reading on my screen
now.
I'm sure
it's fulfilling.
We need to take ourselves a break. When we come back...
If they didn't do it on purpose, when anybody quits a successful series to become a movie star, I give them two words of advice every time. Shelling long.
Mm.
Those are my two words of advice every time.
I have 11 words. Guy from CSI Miami who always wears the sunglasses. David Caruso. Yes.
Yeah, but he came back. Shelley's withered.
That's a good point.
She's almost Shelley Winters.
We will take ourselves a break. You're cool on Ted McGinley now?
Yeah, totally. I'm with you. Maybe we can get him on our show.
Seriously, if they just did a regular Sopranos episode and he played Tony Soprano and nothing else was said about it, and in the press it was just Sopranos back for an eighth season, would there be more talk about that Monday morning than any other topic in the last 5 years?
Not, I mean, not in TV world.
Not in the TV world. It'd be all over the place. People would watch just for the spectacle.
Yeah.
Of it. All right. They'd be over it by the sixth episode, but it's still, you would just watch. You would get high and watch.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see all the other characters come back.
Everything's the next scene. It's like, hey, T. And here comes the tall, blonde, good-looking guy. Slender. Okay. We'll take ourselves a break. It's Monday.
It is.
Hence, Music Monday. We will be going to the Playboy Mansion later this week. So we decided to keep with the theme. This is the music you would like playing or not like playing when you enter the grotto. There's a bunch of babes or in T's case, a bunch of dudes in the grotto. It's hot. You've had a few cocktails. You're feeling pretty good about yourself. You come into the grotto. What do you want to hear or what don't you want to hear? Music Monday. We'll do it next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaduce, and Teresa Strasser. In a while, we're going to give you a chance to join us at the Playboy Mansion on Thursday night. But right now, it's time to think about your theme song. What do you want to hear as you enter the grotto? Adam, Danny, and Teresa will share theirs in the latest installment of Music Monday on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, what do you want to hear? What don't you want to hear? We have them both. We like to start off with the good and then feather our way into the bad. First, the good. I don't know what I like about this song. It doesn't say anything about chicks or grottos. I don't even know the name of the song, and I just found out who did the song. It's Jimmy Eat World.
Oh, good band.
It's just you walking into the grotto. Now, picture this. Ace Man's got nothing but a set of reflective cop shades on.
Right.
Some knee-high pirate slash Vegas magician boots on, a banana hammock, and a tweed coat thrown over my shoulder.
Oh, too bad we're not the same size. You can just come over and borrow it. It's in my closet.
And I'm strutting in slow motion. And I do that move where I slide the shade down my nose and look over the shade at a hot chick to establish some eye contact. Just like the jag, just like the riff, just like the vibe, just like the feeling.
Yeah, it's good. This would be good if you were smoking a little kush.
Walking in slow motion.
This would be you.
I learned a new term.
But this is good. Like, you have a tendency to say, and I have a tendency to be, and lied to me, on the nose. Mm-hmm. This is good just because this is good grotto music.
It's fine.
It could be sexy, yeah.
It could be really sexy music anywhere. It's not specific to the grotto, but in the grotto, it would rock for you.
Yeah. Walking like in slow motion, pirate boots, banana hammock. Yeah,
also good anywhere.
Smoking the kush. All right. That's a good one. Now we go to the bad. Francis.
You don't want boys in the grotto, too?
No.
Nice.
Don't want to run into a slick, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I want to hit my own iceberg, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Just the way I roll. Connie Francis.
That's how you roll.
1961. Yeah. Look out, ladies. Coming for you. Who wants to go into the game room and play some foosball? Here's some terry cloth robes. I'll turn my head while I hold them open for you. That's a puss move, isn't it? That move where you hold the robe and turn your head?
It's, I don't know a way out of it.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, you have to. Because if she asks you to and you don't, then you're definitely not getting sex from her.
They never ask. You just have to do the robe open and turn your head. But let me say this. If you held the robe another 6 inches higher, you wouldn't have to turn your head.
Why? So I could see her knees? bitch.
I'm just saying, making fun of me again. They just walk out and they'd get behind it.
And I still see the back of their legs and their calves.
Either way, it's a short joke.
That's what he's doing.
Where the boys are, not a good one. Here,
not a good one, but a great one.
Now, here's another one. Now, this one's a twist because this one starts out like it's going to be good and then goes bad. One of my favorite songs.
If I were a tower of strength, I'd walk away. I'd look in your eyes.
And talking about being a tower of strength.
Yep.
I don't need you.
Tough guy.
I don't love you anymore.
Unless he's singing to me.
I'm walking out that door. I'm going to the grotto, bitch.
Your knees.
Oh,
I got it.
You'd be calling to me.
But here's the twist.
But a tower of a strength is a something.
Here's where it goes bad.
I'll never be.
Oh. He's not a tower of strength.
That's what he isn't.
He says, if I was a tower of strength, I would do this, but I'm not.
I had it backwards, though. I had him singing to Miss September in the grotto, saying, you can't have me. I'm a tower of strength, and I'm leaving.
Right.
That's how badass he is.
Right.
That works.
I don't love you.
A song you'll never hear me sing to any month.
What?
That I'm a strength of talent and I'm walking out the door in Miss September. It could be Miss September Pig Farmer Calendar. And I'm still staying in the grotto with her.
Here it comes.
I'll never be.
Oh, I love this song. Gene McDaniels.
Of course.
Black guy.
I don't want you.
Listen to this.
I don't need you. I don't love you anymore, and I'd walk out that door.
This is also a bit wholesome sounding, maybe for the grotto.
Except for the down on the knees, but
you'd be calling to me.
I just want an excuse to play this song.
Tower of strength is a something I'll never be.
That's a funny song.
Tuned into the oldie station. This is the Adam Carolla Show.
Listen, you pukes. Kiss my ass. Smartest city in the world says we're number one.
That's right. That's right. Followed by, we're also number one in the city of total debauchery, Vegas. Can I tell you, what does that say about this show?
That's looks and cooks.
That damn right it is. That's a whore in the bedroom and Madonna in the kitchen, or however that story goes.
That's right. That's what you call range.
That is.
Smartest city and the drunkest city all think
Vegas
we're good
was
enough
in
to
the
be
top
number
three
one.
Dumbest.
Plus, we've
Vegas, LA.
That's what my point exactly. We're number one in the smartest. We're number one in the on the low scale of the not so smart guys, but we're still number one.
Right.
So what you got to do is invite Carolla up to Seattle to do something fun, and I'll go to Vegas.
There yes. You go.
Let's play some games.
I'll stay here.
All right. So, Tower of Strength, a bad choice. T, you've got yours.
Yep.
I have some more good and some more bad. Danny has more good and more bad. Oh, you guys have chimed in with your good and bad as well. This is the song you want to hear when you're entering the grotto and the song you don't want to hear, inspired by our trip to the Playboy Mansion coming up this Thursday evening. We'll take a quick break. Back with more Music Monday next.
Back to Music Monday on the Adam Carolla Show. The best and the worst songs you can hear as you enter the grotto at the Playboy Mansion. Phone number's 866-901-ADAM. It's Music Monday on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, we have ours. I have my number one. We're all sitting on our number one, but what about you? How say you, Scotch from Los Angeles?
Nice name.
Oh, I say, I would love to hear I Want to Sex You Up by Color Me Bad as I walk in.
Color Me Bad was like the three white guys and the one black guy.
Yeah.
And who's Velvet DeVoe?
I have no idea. I got confused during this whole period. I was sitting home listening to the best of Gene McDaniels, the 50s. So, I miss this whole Color Me Bad, Sex You Up.
Talk about on the nose.
I think I played in a celebrity softball game with one of the guys from Color Me Bad, though. It's funny when you play in these celebrity things or do these celebrity things and you're talking to the other celebrities on your team and you're going, wow, what happened to that guy's career? And the guy goes, I don't know. You're up, dude. And you think, oh, wait a minute. I'm playing in the softball game, too.
Oh, that means things are bad for you.
Yes, yes, it does. All right, but here's a good song. Let's talk to Jan. Jan?
Hey, what's up, dude?
What do you got, dude?
I'm thinking Duran Duran, Girls on Film.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
Good, good. Good 80s, getting laid, kind of pre-AIDS.
And if I'm not mistaken, there's water in this video. I know it's not the boat one.
Chicks walking down the runway, getting stuff like dumped on them and stuff, and in a boxing ring and stuff. It's pretty hot.
Like that?
Yeah.
Well, should I bring our gear? Thanks, if you really want to get turned on, should we bring the mitts?
Yeah.
Get some of these chicks to work the mitts?
Yeah. The hot chicks in the boxing thing. That's what the strong 80s theme.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Matt on line 6, Bald Brian. You got the song ready, Matt?
Hey, what's up, Adam?
What's happening, man?
Not much. Calling you from the smartest city in the world.
Right on, yeah, man.
Except for the score would go up, they kicked Matt out.
Matt, are you lowering the average? What's happening?
I don't know about that.
The mayor didn't ask you to pack your wind-up beanie and head for the airport?
Not yet.
All right, what do you have for us, Matt?
All right, I got a bad song for walking into the grotto.
All right, let's hear it.
Ween... Homo Rainbow.
As heard on South Park.
Well, that's only bad for a certain.
Right. For some people, it's great.
For some people, it's raining.
Great
now.
News.
Yeah.
Do you think at the Playboy Mansion they ever have gay night?
No.
No?
No, it's no. Not.
Wouldn't make sense.
It's not like
it's
Disneyland. Where the Disneyland has gay night.
Yeah. Very popular. They packed the house.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, we're having a little technical difficulty, but you get it.
You get it.
That was clever from the smartest city in the world.
Speaking of clever, T.
Yeah?
You're up, baby girl.
Well, this one isn't that clever, but I was just looking for a song that was sexy, and I wanted a female singer, singer-songwriter.
Yeah, Because the Night.
Yeah, I think she co-wrote it with Bruce Springsteen. I've always loved this song.
It's a great song.
It is a great song.
I don't know why
Patti Smith.
Yeah.
Don't get her confused with Smythe.
Yeah, different chick.
They yell at you, both of them.
Yeah, one's from Scandal. The other's from New Jersey.
Same thing.
Don't you think this is a sexy song?
Yes. You know what makes it also sexy, if you don't mind, it's a tad empowering of the woman, that she's in charge of what's happening around. Chicks, like, really dig that, I think.
I think Bruce wrote this song and she covered it, because if you hear it, it sounds like a Bruce Springsteen song. Bruce Springsteen songs had an Indian sort of tom-tom kind of...
Yeah, composed by Bruce Springsteen and Patti Smith. But yes. I think he recorded it first.
Oh, he did?
I think so.
All right, well, this is where it became a hit. Bald Brian?
He was actually, because of a contract dispute, he was actually not allowed to record or release anything for about 2 or 3 years. And so he did songs for other people like this.
Right. This was on her 1978 album, Easter.
If I am not mistaken, because sometimes I am about those two, I believe she turned down the job of lead singer of Van Halen.
Really?
Yep.
You mean after David Lee Roth?
Yeah.
Does sound familiar for some reason.
Yeah,
I can't remember where I heard it.
It's either one of the Patties, and I'm assuming it's this one, the cute one.
Mm.
But she said it right to my face. So, I mean, I'm positive I'm not mistaken on this one, unless she's lying.
It's too bad Roth didn't turn down his last gig. All right.
Why?
Let's not live in the
past.
We
wouldn't look so goddamn good.
Well, decent point.
You know, compared to a dwarf, I'm a giant.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
All right, Stretch, what do you got in the good department?
I like that. Okay. In the good department, I tried not to be completely on the nose, because the nose for me has the word grotto or Playboy or something like that, and that's is on the nose. I did what T did. I just went, let's get sexy here. Let's just get sexy.
Well, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
You know what? You could have gone sexual healing, so this is a little off the nose for you.
No. Because that implies I'm giving her herpes at this very moment. Okay? It's like, let's do this because it's nice, and then I'll give you some Zyrex.
Now, it should be noted that none of us knows whose song is what or in advance. We only time we'll ever know on rare occasion, I'll say, how about this song? And Michael say, that's Teresa's song. And once in a while he says, that's Danny's song. And then I say, give me that sword. I'm going to fall on it.
You couldn't fall on my sword. I'm serious. I have the sword from Braveheart.
Oh, it's really?
You'd have to run and jump.
I'm the only guy on the planet that's never seen Braveheart. I don't know what my problem is.
I've never
seen it. Oh, I'm the only dude on the planet then. All right, good song. On the nose, but good. Let's hear mine. Now, mine is very different. This has nothing to do with sexuality. It's just I'm making an entrance, and I want people to know it.
Good. Nice. That's not good.
Also, it's the 70s. I'm wearing a leisure bathing suit. You know what I'm wearing? I'm wearing one of those terry cloth trunks with the wrap.
Yeah.
Got a pack of smokes in the pocket that's down on my hip, and I have my initials embroidered into it. It's powder blue, and it's terry cloth. Remember when guys used to have little pool outfits?
Yeah, like Jack LaLanne.
Yeah, sure.
It was cool to have that little terry cloth wrap thing with the trunks. I come walking in. It's pre-AIDS. Chicks know it's swinging time, and all I have to do is make this announcement as I enter the grotto. Is anyone here uptight? Nobody's going to raise their hand. Yes, I'm uptight.
I'm tight.
Is anyone here uptight? Good. Let's get to business. It was a different time.
Nice. Because a good entrance is everything.
All right. Then I do my thing with the golf club, except for I'm not holding a golf club. Pow! Oh. Do we have an end on this one?
Forever.
Yeah.
Bum, bum.
Ah, it was a simpler time. All right, T, now we go bad, baby girl.
I don't want to hear this for a couple of reasons. One, it's depressing and a bad song. And
Phil Collins.
It's about drowning.
That's what I always heard, but I could never really connect the dots.
There are lyrics in the song, if you told me I was drowning, I would not lend a hand.
It's a weird, I don't know if there's going to be urban myths anymore.
Because of the internet?
Not only the internet, although that helped spread them, but when this song came out, 1982, 83, something like that, somewhere in the early 80s, we didn't have that much to do. So, like, some guy would walk in and he'd go, you know that Phil Collins song? Yeah. Well, you know that song's based on? No. A guy was at a park and his wife was killed, stabbed brutally. And they never found the guy. And a year later, he's walking through the same park at night and he looked out into the lake and that man. Now, we were all ears because we didn't have anything going.
Right.
Now, introduce a 60-inch flat screen and a joystick. And have the same guy walk in the room and talk to a 17-year-old. Hey, dude, you know that Phil Collins... Hey, Dillweed, you're blocking the set! Hey, but you know that song? What song? That Phil Collins? Yeah? That song's a... Hey, let me file that under... Who gives a rat's ass? I'm playing! I'm trying to save the goddamn universe here. Move your ass! And, by the way, I have some porn that's illegal in this country I have to look at later on. Straight out. It's called the Straight Out of Germany series, Straight Out of Germany 29. So how about you move your fat ass and take, what do you call them? Stories, and go out and tell it to, like, a Native American or something. I got myself a TiVo. I got a joystick. I'm trying to kill aliens here. Just shake your ass. See, I don't, it's no longer entertainment. It's no longer...
We paint a sad picture.
We don't have time for that.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a buzzkill. Danny, what do you got in the buzzkill department?
First of all, by the way, you're right about the internet killing you on Urban Legends, if you care, real quick. Mm-hmm. Castilians with that lisp. I just came up last night and I said, you know, that was because the king of Spain had a lisp. And that's why they speak that way in Spain, but not in Mexico. It's not true.
Not true.
I just learned that last night. got my ass kicked by a 25-year-old girl.
I know. I feel like it's...
Go home and get your fucking shine box.
It's the great humbler.
Yeah, I don't know if I punched her in the face. We came out even.
Right.
But she won. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt with that, but I just, you had made such a good point that all of these things are so factual and easy to find. All right, here is a bad one I would not want to hear in the grotto.
And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet.
It's when Billy Joe jumped off the Tallahassee Bridge.
Last thing I need, and in a way this has kind of happened, thing I need is to be with a girl, in a grotto especially, and found her dead drowned. That's
right.
Bad. It's a bad song for those. For those of us who care about our reputations.
Anybody
that she goes in the in the grove with the hot chick and she comes floating out face down, I'm sure that's going to damage what's left of this reputation.
I got a buzz killer, too, as far as the ladies go. You know, they don't like to hear about guys jumping off of bridges into bodies of water. But one thing women love is horses. And one thing... Huh? We got it? Yeah.
I think Billy Joe's a girl, though.
And, it is?
Yeah.
Billy Joe. Maybe it is. Although they made a movie about it, I think, and it was a guy.
B-I-L-L-I-E, Billy.
I'm going to find out whether that... I think they made a movie about Billy Joe jumping off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
And Barbara Eden was in it. I would say it was 2 seconds in this age that
Carl
we were just discussing.
Carl Weathers could not care less.
Are you thinking about, whatever. Where were we? You have my song?
We were doing the number one show in the smartest city in the world.
That's right.
And
you may be thinking smart. Harper Valley PTA, by the way, with Barbara Eden, but
I might check into it. Very good.
Now,
oh, God.
This song,
you're not getting any.
Michael Murphy, coming up into the present day. We're talking 1975.
Wow.
Yeah, we're talking about the last time you got some if you played us for chicks when I came over.
Singing about his horse that died. Imagine a horse floating in that grotto.
Dude, that's so worse than my grandma just died.
Yeah.
The girl still do ya.
Snout down, baby.
But dead horse, she's gonna cry and go home.
Here's a song by a gay guy.
If I walked into the grotto and this was playing to you, just be like, sorry. I have to leave and stuff kitty litter into myself.
The horse died in winter?
Yeah, came an early storm.
There was no
killing frost. Oh my God, just the word killing frost.
It was just a pony?
She called it wildfire, now it's dead. Busted down and stalled in a blizzard. Horse froze to death. She ran calling. Tears filling the grotto.
A beautiful song.
Chicks all doing that thing where they raise their hands and join hands and rock back. One chick's got a lighter up. She burnt my sack. I was standing outside of the grotto on the coping nude. She did the thing with the single lighter. Burnt the hairs right off the nads.
I'd have to be standing three rows behind her for to be only that high. Gary Coleman would still burn my chest there.
All right.
I wanted to hear more.
You want to hear? All right, let's listen.
What happened to this horse? But there came an early snow. I get it. It was cold.
When the douche man drops his shorts, that's when the chicks all yell wildfire.
You know, I haven't completely grown back since that old lady shaved me.
We're going to find out Thursday.
Tell Danny to move on.
She knows a wildfire's coming back one day. It's going to ride the ghost of wildfire into hell.
I hate to ruin anybody's expectations, but I won't be fully naked at the mansion. One, I've been asked by management not to be.
No.
But if you're back, you've gotten around. Would you ever put a hot curling iron down on the lid of a toilet seat?
Oh, I've been burnt by many a curling iron.
I have a burn that goes straight up the crack of my keister that looks like I was...
Oh,
like,
you sat on it?
Give me a break.
Really?
Yeah, all the way up both butt cheeks. It's horrifying.
And the show has reached a new low.
Bad times.
Either that or it's a really obscure fetish.
All right.
No. Dude, I want a fetish so bad. I really will. Like, you killed my 48-year-old three-way. I'm still mad at you, Corolla.
You'll thank me in the morning.
I will not. I will never thank you for that. I will curse you to my grave.
I painted a very vivid picture of her in my mind's eye.
I think she would have showed Danny a good time.
You know what would have been on my headstone? Or may still be? There could have been three of us in here. That's what's going to be on my headstone, you bastard.
Whatever.
All right, we need to take ourselves a break. We have your calls. I'd love to talk to more of you, but the great Dana Carvey awaits, and we're running woefully behind as per usual. So we'll take a quick break. Be back with Dana Carvey next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaduce, and Teresa Strasser, one of the all-time greats from Saturday Night Live.
There's a lady broccoli, chopping broccoli, chopping broccoli, chopping broccoli, chopping broccoli, chopping broccoli, chopping broccoli.
Dana Carvey is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Song was a nice intro. You know, we have our number ones for the Grotto that I screwed up and didn't get to because we're running a little bit late. I'll tell you what, we'll keep those on ice for 1 second. We'll speak to the great Dana Carvey, and then after we speak to the great Dana Carvey, you'll hear all our number ones. Dana Carvey?
Adam.
Great to speak to you.
Thank you. That was awesome. I'm one of those self-loving comedians. I was getting into that song.
you're that rare breed of happy comedian?
No, miserable.
Okay, cool.
But Danny, what about Danny and I? Remember Danny?
Yes, I do indeed.
Chicago? That was my last New Year's Eve gig.
Do you remember that?
I do. Remember, they went nuts, and then, you know, have you ever done gigs, Adam, midnight stand-up gigs?
I've never done anything on New Year's Eve.
It's horrible, because they hit midnight, they went nuts, and then they just projectile vomited on me.
It was wild.
And then Danny came up, I ran, jumped on Danny, he flipped me over his head, but I landed on my feet, and then
we
embraced.
We gotta work that out, man.
Let's
do a team act. I'll open for you for just like 10 minutes or so. And then every now and again during that 10 minutes, you just run out and I'll flip you, man, on your feet and run off the stage.
I want whatever you're doing in your workouts, man.
That
guy was like a sack of potatoes. I mean, you literally flipped him like he weighed 10 pounds.
Well, Dana,
what's going on with you?
Dana, how much do you weigh?
I weigh 150 on a good day.
That's good flipping weight.
That's
for
great flipping weight. Because he won't go too high in the air. It'll go right over and land on his feet and run right off stage. And I'll say, ladies and gentlemen, Dana Carvey, out of gum.
Because I never wanted to fight you.
Maybe that's how we could bring Dana out at the Grove in Anaheim, I should say, Friday.
Oh, what are you bringing that up? Oh, yeah, Friday. Thanks, Adam.
October 26th.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Dana. We'll give some plugs about the Grove appearance, 8 o'clock. Tickets available now. How does your career begin? When you're in high school, what do you think you're going to be doing for a living? And then how does that take you to Saturday Night Live?
Interesting. I guess I should tell the real story. It started in 64. I was 9. I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I learned I could, you know, kind of mimic things. So the next day I said, oh, Mom, you know, how you doing? I'd like to get me some pancakes.
And doesn't that sound like Ed Sullivan?
That doesn't really sure right now. What's your demographic? How old is your audience?
Wow.
Do you know that I have listened to you? Last year I was driving my kid to high school, and we had you on every morning, and it made me a hero because the masturbation sodomy stuff, I wouldn't switch it.
Thank you.
Good for you.
And then all of a sudden we lost you, and I just found you last week. You're on 1550 AM.
Right, because you're up in the Bay Area.
Yeah, so what the hell was that all about? They need to let us know where you're going.
Good, a very good point. Yes, we went from FM to AM, which is a lot like going from the New York Yankees to the Louisville Mud Hens.
Pretty much.
I love the Mudheads.
I plug you, you plug me.
But that's what I like, actually.
No, I was a runner in high school, actually. I was a 427 miler. How'd that get out?
Wow.
Wow, really?
Now, look, I mean, what people don't realize is a six-minute mile is near impossible for normal people. Mm-hmm. So a 427 mile is, you know, not Olympic speed, but it's damn fast.
Who remembers and thinks of automatically when you think of the fastest guy for the mile is still the 4-minute mile. Now it's been killed 100 times since then. But you remember when somebody hit the 4-minute mile?
Yeah.
And everybody freaked out.
Roger Bannister. Yeah.
Now it's 3:43, but it's guys from Ethiopia raised at 12,000 feet who are running like 18 miles a day. It's not a fair fight anymore.
Yeah. If I'm not being chased by the cops, because then I'm faster, but if I'm just running as hard as I can on a bet, I think I could do a 10-minute mile. I think.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good. So you're a long-distance runner high school.
Runner. Yeah, dysfunctional family, 5 kids, very disciplined type dad, you know.
And super nice guy, by the way.
A good incubation thing for a comic.
And so you realize, and as far as the gift of mimicking, it's just that. It's a gift. I mean, obviously, Dana Carvey's honed his skills over the years.
I ain't no Daryl Hammond.
But
Kevin Pollak.
Yeah.
Real masters, you know.
Daryl Hammond is a great mimic from Saturday Night Live and great at what he does, but one of the least happy people I think I've ever met in my life. Would you agree with that?
He definitely, but he's doing better.
He should mimic a happy person for 10 minutes.
Try that, yeah.
That'd be the greatest role of his life. But you had the gift of mimicry.
That was one part of it. I could do it pretty well, but I soon learned I wasn't a real. I actually smuggled a tape recorder into a Rich Little show in the 70s.
Wow.
In my hometown to learn more impressions.
Boy, that's weird.
I was sick, yeah.
So Rich.
No, it's just, if you think about it, it's like a triple sow cow in ice skating.
Yeah.
You're getting the voice of a movie star, but is not from that movie star. And then you're getting that on tape.
Yeah. Right.
It's like third generation, not that guy.
Yeah, I think
I copied Dan Aykroyd's Jimmy Carter impression.
Right.
And then 8-9 years later, he comes into Lorne Michaels' office Saturday Night Live and says, hey, I like your, you know, George Bush impression. So
it's been funny, like people going, I like your Yul Brynner, but it's staticky.
It's very early Frank Gorshwin. I don't know how far you guys go back.
You go to see Rich Little because at the time, in terms of guys doing voices, he's the king of the world.
King, and basically most comedians, I think, are born in the back of a car, basically a Volkswagen Bug in my case, with 3 friends that are stoned, and you're in the back in the darkness, and they're giggling, and you're just riffing.
Well,
you don't do jokes to them.
Right.
You just go. Right?
Dana Carvey, do you remember what you did for your audition for Saturday Night Live?
I auditioned twice. I don't know if this is interesting, but I auditioned twice, and this is true. One time I auditioned, I went on at midnight at the Comedy Store, and there was no MC. They would announce you off stage, and Kennison went on before me. Then I went up, isn't that special? So that was death.
Right.
And then I finally got Lorne Michaels to see me at Igby's, a little club in the west side. He brought Cher with him, Brandon Tartikoff, the head of NBC. And, you know, I did Chopped Broccoli, Church Lady, corny stuff, vaudeville, burlesque kind of stuff. But, you know, he liked it. He says, you know, one time I didn't hire a man because I didn't like his shoes. It was very intimidating. But that's how I basically got it. And I never thought I should be on it.
Ed Sullivan, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ed Sullivan. You know what sounds like Ed Sullivan?
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich. I think we got to understand. We got to do better our campaign right here. That's the key to impressions. You want me to tell you how I get to Rudolph Giuliani?
Yeah.
Basically, you start with Jay Leno because they have a similar thing with their tongue at the front of their teeth there, which gives them this sort of sound. And then to get to Rudolph Giuliani, you basically lower it down. You do a bit of a stutter and a bit of a Brooklyn accent, and you sort of jump on things, because I'm the only man who's been there. I know what it's like when a city's been under attack. I know how to kill a man with my bare hands. I know what it's like when the grocer won't make his payments, and you got to send your goombas down
to rough them up. I've been there. I understand it. So it's that's how you do it. And then you just exaggerate it, and everyone believes you.
Dana Carvey, do you do you have another combo you'd like to lay on us? Yeah, I do like the here's how you arrive at this destination. You head off toward Lenoberg.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then you hook a ride at Goombaville.
Right.
And now you end up here.
Do you know, the only thing interesting about impersonations to me is how good they are. If they're really good, then they're fascinating. I didn't think that I could be interested in how you got to one. But when he started at Jay Leno and worked his way down into another guy, that's almost like a piano lesson. You know what I mean? It's like, how'd you do that? That's neat.
Exaggerate. Like, without Gore now, I just do him very, I take him very feminine because he's gotten very feminine. I mean, he didn't talk like this when he was the vice president, but since he's gotten out, he's got, this planet is heating up. I mean, these seas are rising faster than Bill Clinton's trousers at a HUA convention. Adam, let me tell you, the only way to cool down this planet is to elect Hillary Clinton president because that's one cold bitch. The next thing he's going to say, thanks for the applause, he's going to say, now I'd like some lotion. I do get dry skin, and I like to apply emollients to softalize my skin. Ladies have done it for years. I do moisturize my inner, outer, upper thigh, lower buttock. I'll shave my ass every Tuesday and apply emollients to softalize and supplize my butter thighs.
I wonder if what's going on with Al Gore, it's probably twofold in terms of him going feminine. A, he's putting on the weight, which means higher levels of circulating estrogen is actually hitting menopause.
Yes.
The other thing that's going on with Al Gore is it's his audience. Mm-hmm. He is talking to super liberal, tree-hugging, you do the gay math if you want, mm-hmm. but that's the audience he's talking to. You know when Hillary Clinton goes to the South and she sounds like she was raised in Alabama?
Down in London.
Or if you hang around brothers too long, you'll start sounding like a brother. Al Gore's not talking to Republicans anymore. He's talking to a lot of super liberal folks that have questionable sexuality. And maybe he is sort of turning into his audience a little bit.
He's the high priestess of a secular religious movement, which is global warming.
He's a Wiccan priestess. That's what's happened to Al Gore.
He's a Wiccan.
He's a feminized, kind of caring sort of person. And I think that's very astute, and I'm going to use that Friday night at the Grove.
Thank you.
Friday night at the Grove.
Come through for me. That's what I love about you.
Go ahead and use it. Dana Carvey performing at the Grove of Anaheim Friday night. This Friday, 8 o'clock. Tickets on sale now. Ticketmaster.com is where you go. Dana, come in and see us when you're in the neighborhood. We're right in the heart of the Mid-Wilshire district.
I would like to come in there and see Danny again, because we rocked that night.
We rocked that night, dude.
And I love her voice.
Hey, you know
Thank
what?
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, Dana.
I want to work out the flip. I want to introduce Dana Carvey by having him come out and just hurl him over my head and have him land on his
feet. I'm sure a 51-year-old Dana Carvey would be elated to go sailing over your ass.
I'm this big. How high does he have the sail?
Decent point. All right. We need to take a break. Quick, Bald Brian. Yeah. Quick, just because I promised it, our number one songs. I dropped the ball on this on our Grotto Music Monday. Songs you don't want to enter the Grotto to. T. Worst song to enter the Grotto to.
This might be going through your mind, but you don't want to hear it in song.
And all the pretty girls have to dance with drunk old men.
Who is this?
Great minds.
Noel Miller. He's a kind of an obscure singer-songwriter.
So all the pretty girls have to dance with the drunk old men.
I think this would be a buzzkill.
Why is that funny?
Yeah, it is a buzzkill. Dan, what's your number one buzzkill for the Grotto?
Okay, I'm going to change the first letter of the last word to a B, okay? Just so I can say it. It's by the Dead Kennedys, and the song is called Too Drunk to Buck. Because that would be a buzzkill. You get her, she's in the Grotto, and you got Whiskey Wiener.
Yeah. Yeah, that is bad times.
That's the worst, man.
That is bad times. All right, quickly, let me give you my number one song. This one is from a great balladeer known as Leonard Nimoy. The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins.
Nice.
In the middle of the earth, in the land of Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, he lives in a hobbit hole and everybody knows him. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins.
That's what it sounds like when the vagina's closed.
Bilbo Baggins, bravest little hobbit of them all.
I don't want Nimoy singing about Bilbo Baggins.
It's a double whammy for me. It sounds too close to Bonaducci with the Baggins and he's only 3 feet tall. It just seems like they're talking about me too much.
Yeah, that is a wood killer. Turn it up a little more, Bilbo.
They just like to eat and be left alone. But one day Bilbo was asked to go on a big adventure to the cave.
That's enough. We'll take ourselves a break. When we come back, I watched 60 Minutes last night. Saw a very interesting story we talked about in the 6 o'clock hour about the super peanut butter that's bringing the kids back to life in Africa. But I have other questions. I'll play you this very moving expose next on the Adam Carolla Show. Well, let's talk a little harsh reality. I was watching 60 Minutes last night. That was a very moving story. No, we're not doing the morning zoo. Watching a little, I think the turkey cluck comes from, oh yeah, that's right.
Dick Gobbler.
Dick Gobbler in the morning.
That was our fake morning news radio zoo bit.
Gobbler in the morning. All right, and it's Funny Farm. That's no, right. This is not Morning Zoo. This is more for our Seattle listeners, the world's smartest people.
You know we're going to talk them into hating us.
I know. I was watching 60 Minutes, as I often do, on Sunday night. I think it's just one of the best TV shows on television.
First show I got to watch on my new 60-inch flat panel screen. I just moved in yesterday. It was bitchin'.
I don't know if I want to see Morley Safer's head 9 foot around, but...
You do. You do. You want to sit there and go, my God, that's my TV?
Yeah, high def, not kind to 60 Minutes, but the point is...
average age of correspondent, 92.
Right. And if you like Andy Rooney, you have to be high and deaf.
And on the cush.
And on the cush. Tease new word. No, I even like Andy Rooney. I like the old man with
love
the
him.
Hair coming out of ears complaining.
Night.
I enjoy it. So I'm watching 60 Minutes last night, and they did a couple of stories, and I'll connect them. But the one I really want to talk about is this Niger, which used to be Niger, I do believe. They're changing it to Niger.
Valerie Plame was pronouncing it that way, and I thought, I'm going to do that from now on.
It's Niger now, which was weird because they did a story about Niger, and then later on when they did a Valerie Plame thing, she mentioned Niger, but not as it pertained to our initial story,
right?
Which was bizarre. But anyway, Anderson Cooper's going to set it up, and then I'll do my commentary.
You probably never heard a good news story about malnutrition. But you're about to. Every year, malnutrition kills 5 million children.
Oh.
That's one child every 6 seconds. But now, the Nobel Prize-winning relief group, Doctors Without Borders, says it finally has something that can save millions of these children. It's cheap, easy to make, and even easier to use. So what is this miraculous cure? It's a ready-to-eat, vitamin-enriched concoction called Plumpy Nut, an unusual name for a food that may just be the most important advance ever to cure and prevent malnutrition.
It's a bizarre name, but they needed something that had all these vitamins and nutrients and calories, but also that you didn't need to mix water with.
Right.
Because so much of the water is contaminated. Right. So they came up with this Plumpy Nut. It's peanut butter, dried milk, and just high fructose something. Well, he'll continue and we'll listen.
Kids who would have had to have been hospitalized don't have to be hospitalized.
Don't have to be hospitalized anymore. We can treat them at home now. The reason we can do that is because we can give children Plumpy Nut here in the ambulatory center and they take a week's ration home. Moms treat their children at home and come back every week for a weight check.
That's what Sahia Ibrahim has been doing. She's already lost 4 children to malnutrition. Now her 6-month-old twins, Hassana and Husseina, are malnourished. And she's worried they might die, too. So she's been coming here for Plumpy Nut.
Now, of course, they focus on the part where they're trying to save the kids, although my mind starts to wander. You already had 4 kids. Now you have twins that are malnourished. Perhaps we should focus on another nut. Not the plumpy nut that's going in your mouth, but how about the plumpy nut
that's
landing between your legs? Perhaps we should have some folks who didn't have borders. How about condoms without borders? How about birth control without borders? And as I was watching later and thinking about it, the story before this, it's an interesting tale. I'm an atheist, so you know me. I just like Darwin to sort of sort everyone out.
Right.
The story before this was a story of raging wildfires. And I don't have all the stats in front of me, but we've had more wildfires in the last few years than we had in like the 100 years before that. And they're bigger and they're longer. And it used to be a big wildfire was 100,000 acres. Now that's a small wildfire. Whatever the stats are, the point is wildfires have grown tenfold over the last 20 years in this country. And they say, why? Well, one of the reasons why is we got good at putting out fires. So instead of letting them burn out, meaning lightning hits, the earth catches on fire, it runs its course, and then new trees follow. We intervened. Man intervened. Man put those fires out. So we've been putting fires out and putting them out effectively over the last 20 years. Thus, there's a lot more to burn now. See, the stuff that would have burnt out didn't get a chance to burn out because we intervened. We gave them the plumpy nut. We hit the fire. Right. We intervened. We put them out. Now there's that much more to go. I wonder when we intervene, and I, listen, don't question these doctors without borders and these people. These are 10 times better than we could ever dream of being. But just keeping folks alive so that they can procreate, so that they can repeat the same horrible pattern and that we could intervene again on their behalf, doesn't sound like a solution to me.
No, I think Sam Kennison had the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Move where the food is!
4 kids already died of malnutrition, and now you're crapping out a set of twins, and I know we can't judge, but just a little bit, even if it's for them, can't we judge if it helps you?
Dude, that's all we do is judge. We've made that clear around here.
I know.
Nobody hides that we judge.
Well, let's...
Just for me, plumpy nut sounds far too more the way they describe it as something I would go score. You know, it's like, dude, now they're on the quest for the plumpy nut.
I'll tell you, when I get on the kush, I'm going for the plumpy nut.
There are certain things in life you may eventually still starve, but I'm telling you, there are certainly things in this world that one or two ingestion of, and you're just not hungry anymore.
I know, I was sitting around watching the story, and here's how, if I put a microphone on my brain, it would sound like this. Wow, this is tragic. Huh, how's that stuff made? Peanuts. I like peanuts. I'm a gay man. Sugar and powdered milk. I feel sad for those kids. I'm hungry. I'm gay. I wonder if I have peanut butter.
Now, you know what's interesting? They're using that over there to save lives, are they not?
Yes, they are.
Unfortunately, the plumpy nut full of peanuts would kill all American children.
It would.
Yeah, all American children are allergic to peanuts till they die.
That's right. We need a product called Plumpy Puss over here for all the pussies we're giving birth to. But all right.
I've got it.
You got Plumpy Puss?
No problem.
Let's hear the next clip.
Malnutrition destroys a child's immune system, so they're more susceptible to diseases and less capable of recovering from them.
So often these kids aren't even hungry. It's the opposite. They are anorexic because of the deficiencies they have.
So the kids are just dying a slow, painful death. But again, it's because they're cranking out the kids. I mean, look, we can do that math in this country. We know about kids born into families of teen mothers not having a chance. But we're talking about high school. They're talking about survival.
Right.
Shouldn't we be getting these people not to F so much or perhaps don a condom when they do F? And I know, again, it's not politically correct to discuss it, but instead of... There's no amount of plumpy nut we can drop on a problem that's ever going to fix this one.
Right.
And if they do survive, then what? Well, sad again, but as I'm watching, and they're showing the little girl who's now survived. She's now made it. I'm thinking, well, let's see, what day is it? She'll be pregnant.
Right.
At the end of this week, and then she'll have more malnourished kids. Look, I just use this as an example of what we need to do in this country on a different scale. But
set them on fire and not put them out?
Get them to pull out.
Oh. I combined your two
analogies. That's the out part. Get them to stop having the kids. The day they stop crapping out the kids is the day the infants stop dying of malnutrition.
But do you remember what happened when Richard Gere went over to India and said no whatever, meaning sex, no condom, no sex, no condom, no sex, and all he did was start a scandal by kissing a movie star? And here's the deal in India for prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
No condom, $2. Condom, $1.
Oh, really? Yeah,
that's the deal.
Hmm.
You know, nobody, you're never going to get that across. I was asked on some show the other day, what message would you give to Britney Spears? And I said, none.
Hmm.
And they said, why? After what you've been through and triumphed and all that crap. And I said, because, dude, I could be sitting there watching TV when I was a drug addict. The Pope could come on my television set and said, Danny Fonucci, I'm talking to you. It's me, the Pope. I'm talking to you.
Right.
I want you to put those drugs down right now. And I would turn to my buddy and I'd go, dude, I'm so high, I think the Pope's talking to me, man. There's nothing I'm going to tell Brittany. There's nothing anybody's going to tell anybody about sex.
Right.
You know?
No, I know.
It's just never going to work
that way.
I don't
know if we're going to tell him.
Somebody's got to take over and do it, Adam. And so he's got to jump over there and get on a plane and say you're not allowed to anymore.
Well,
you'll go to jail
for
10 years.
Here's how you do it. Hey, mama, who lost the four kids to malnutrition, who now has two twins that are dying of malnutrition, I'm going to offer you a trade, and you're not going to have to give me anything. I'm going to give you two things.
Excellent trade.
One is called Plumpy Nut. The other is called Nori Plant.
Right.
And I will give you the Plumpy Nut, and here is some effing Nori Plant so I don't have to see your seventh dying kid coming back this way. And people look at that as inhumane. Really? Isn't giving birth to a kid you can't take care of and can't nourish inhumane? You tell me what the greater atrocity is. You not being able to give birth, or you giving birth to your seventh kid that comes out like a scarecrow?
Okay, if you're going to deprive them, and I don't mean it in a bad way, Adam. I think you're absolutely right. I think you need a third trade. I think you trade them, you give them their Plumpy Nut, and you give them their Nori Plant. But then you got to toss in a rabbit.
Hmm?
There's no reason the woman should suffer. You have to throw her a battery-operated device.
Oh, that kind of rabbit.
Yeah.
The other kind she'd eat on the way home.
There's still a percentage of failure on the North Pole.
<Operator.
laughs> You know, I don't care if she lives in a mud hut. She still needs to get off every now and again.
Well,
she's going to get cranky.
Mud hut, good name for TV. All right, let's go on to a clip that basically explains what life is like over there.
Here in the countryside, where 85% of the people live, girls start marrying at age 11. By 15, most have wed, and by 16, most have already become mothers. The average woman here gives birth 8 times in her lifetime, but largely because of malnutrition, 1 in 5 of those children will die before they reach the age of 5. Those who survive, half of them will have stunted growth and will never reach full adult height.
Right. Okay, so here's the retarded. Again, I picture, if you want the answer to any problem, do not picture yourself talking to a Republican or a Democrat or a black guy or a white guy. Do not picture yourself talking to anyone with any agenda. Picture yourself talking to a person from a different planet. And you'd have to go, well, they're having 8 kids and 5 of them are dying of malnutrition. And he'd raise his hand and go, well, why are they having so many kids? And you'd go, that's exactly right, Mork from Ork. You're spot on. Nanu, nanu. And then he'd raise his hand again and go, well, instead of trying to feed all these 8 kids, which seems to be impossible, perhaps you could get them to slow down on the kids. And you'd go, right again, my friend. Shazbot. Shazbot, Mork. You're right. Because that's the first thing an alien would ask. Why? And they'd go, well, how many kids are they having over here in these industrialized nations that seem to be doing pretty well? 2.3? Oh, well, all you got to do is get them down to 2.3 and you're cooking, right? And I'd go, no. We got to make more chubby nut. And he'd go, but why? You're just fueling a problem that is now spinning out of control. And I'd go, shh. You don't know how we do it here on this planet. You go back to your planet where you have things figured out. We'll do it the retarded way down here because we have our pride.
Or we'll do it the fact that there is a warlord who owns the recipe to Chubby Nut.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's getting rich off malnutrition, which happens in every country.
Yeah, although I don't know who has this one, but I swear I wanted to buy some of that Chubby Nut after
it.
It's delicious looking. All right, the very last one is a point that I brought up in the 6 o'clock hour, and Danny reiterated now, which is peanuts and peanut allergies.
What about peanut allergies?
We just don't see it.
You don't see kids with peanut allergies?
We don't see children with symptoms of allergy. In developing countries, food allergy is not nearly the problem that it is in industrialized countries.
Yeah, because we don't have problems.
Yeah, because we're not, like, I hate that because Americans are, I put it this way to a guy once because I just wanted to punch him in the face. I forget what country he was from, but he was calling me weak. Yeah, I think he was a Middle Eastern guy, but he could have been from anywhere, but I think he was Middle Eastern. And he was saying something like, because I have air conditioning, I can't take the heat. Mm-hmm. And because I have a heater, I can't take the cold. And because all I have...
You're soft.
Yes, that's what he was calling me. Because I am the number one superpower, the only superpower left in the world. I personally am weak because my government is strong. And I hate that. I hate that.
Well, we may not be, but our kids sure as hell are. I mean, the peanut allergy thing, you'd think this was the black plague amongst folks on the West Side, especially here in California and especially in Los Angeles. We have become world-class pussies. Why? Because we've eliminated everything else. And as I've said many times, as a human being, there's a part of your brain that just needs to worry. There's a part of your brain that is put there just to worry about survival and your next meal and shelter from the cold and the grizzly bears.
Been there and that, well, not the bear thing, but been there and that's real and that's fair.
We have eliminated all threats.
Right.
Thus, we must go into the make-believe world. So we invent environmental allergies, the paint on the wall, the carpeting on the floor.
Mold.
You see
the Chinese toys.
The black mold and the Chinese toys, the peanut allergies. And then we remove all the peanuts from the Southwest flight. The Ace Man was taken to Vegas, which is the only good thing about Southwest, is that you get the peanuts. All removed, and now they're removed from schools. Why? Because we have nothing left to worry about. Now, why aren't these kids that are clinging to death in this impoverished, sun-scorched region of the earth, how come none of them are allergic to peanuts?
With the lowest immune system going on in the world,
right.
they're barely making it to get to their chunky monkey,
right.
And yet they can have the peanuts.
Fat, pink, white kid with his own chiropractor and therapist at age 9 has peanut allergies. No, he has life allergies. He is a puss. He's allergic to life, and we are enabling our kids,
yep,
by removing all the peanuts.
I've seen it, and you'd have been proud of me. I called this parent on it. We were filming, I don't want to say what show, sure you were, a child star on Age 1, and her kid got stung by a bee. And she wigged. She's allergic to bees. She just goes, her throat's going to close. And, blah, 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 blah. And this, mm-hmm, is on film, and they won't. Of course, they won't show it because of my disconcern, and I'm the host. I went, mm-hmm, no, she's not. So, no, you understand. We need an ambulance right now, which they did, and they called, and everybody did the right thing. Nothing. She had a bee sting.
Right.
Mom just insisted that she's going to die from this bee sting. She got a little bump on her arm where bee stings hurt,
yeah,
and was back with us in 45 minutes.
Well, we're raising...
We just insist that our kids can be killed by anything.
A nation of pusses.
Damn
and
right.
Nobody who's dying of malnutrition is allergic to any food.
I'm running on your vice presidential ticket.
Thank you.
If you'll have me.
But again, keeping these folks alive so that they can breed another day does not seem like a long-term solution to me. All right, I'm Adam Darwin, and that's my opinion. T.
Yep.
Why don't we do a little selling on the news before we take a break?
Sounds good. Van Halen is on tour. Not sounding very good.
Good times. We have some live?
Yep.
Oh, good times. Next.
And now, Alcoa presents... Definitely not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Elyria, Ohio. A 45-year-old man attempted to steal a customer's wallet at a convenience store. When he was caught, he began attacking the customer by removing and swinging his prosthetic leg.
definitely not a Jew.
T-Bone.
Yep.
Let's make and be with the news.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news. Today.
Wildfires are raging. From the high desert to the Pacific Ocean, Santa Ana winds fueling the fires.
Yeah.
Lots of folks in Malibu had to evacuate.
Mm.
You were not there.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore did not have to evacuate. But you don't know yet if your home has been affected.
No. And I just had an enlightening conversation with my assistant, Jay. I said, hey, Jay, let's keep an eye on those wildfires. I want to know what's going on. And he said, the one in Irvine? I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Preferably if you could find one in Montana or Kentucky, out of state, that would be awesome. And after we're done finding out what's going on in a city where I don't own a home, then perhaps we could double back and go to Malibu, where the H man owns a house. Because I told him flat out, I'm not getting
out. I am the god of
hellfire. I'm valuable, but you, my friend, could be up on that roof with the garden hose.
Just so you know, I did check. And your house did not burn.
Oh, good times.
Nor did any houses on your street.
But the wind is blowing.
Yeah. That I can't help you with. Yes, it is, and it's expected to kick back up. And you're not, I would not say you're completely out of the safety zone. Mm-hmm. But your house didn't burn last night, I checked.
Hey, somebody quickly, because preferably from Seattle, because that's where the world's smartest
yeah.
people are.
Or from Vegas, because I want to talk to you.
We learned that earlier. I want to know, I want to ask you guys a question. They have devices where you fire up a Briggs & Stratton lawnmower engine, you drop a hose in your swimming pool, and then your hose becomes, your pool becomes a reservoir
oh.
to fight the fire. A lot of these people have nice houses, they live up in the hills, and they have a swimming pool, but they run out of water pressure, and the firemen can't do anything. Well, there's a device where you fire the thing up, and now you have, I don't know, 75,000 gallons or whatever your pool is to fight the fire. But the thing's expensive.
Right.
It's like $2,000. It wouldn't seem so expensive if your house burnt to the ground, but it
yeah.
seems like it's a lot of money. But here's my question to somebody who knows a power washer, the thing you hook the garden oh. hose up
yeah.
to that has the
even I know that.
Briggs & Stratton engine on it that
right.
washes the sidewalk.
Right.
What if you hooked a hose up to the power washer and then dropped it into your pool? Once you primed it, once you got water moving through it, could that work the same as the one that's five times as expensive that's called a pump to put out your house? See, the power washer, you just go down to Home Depot and grab that for $400.
Mm-hmm.
A good one with the Briggs & Stratton, everything's probably $450. But this other thing's like $2,300, and I think it's almost the same thing. So somebody could clue me in on that.
Okay, smart
curious.
People of Seattle, get
yeah.
on it.
Go ahead, T-Bone.
Meanwhile, Van Halen has been on tour.
Mm. Mm.
They started earlier, and here they are in Greensboro on the 29th of September. This was a couple days after the beginning of this tour. Perhaps they hadn't worked out the kinks. Here they are, and I have to tell you the song because you might not know it otherwise.
Oh, let us guess.
Okay. Little off.
Wow.
Little off, but it's tough. I mean, it's hard. You could have been there rocking your ass off, high on the kush.
Right, having a great time.
Hoisted the old lady up on the shoulders. She's got the Bic lighter over her head.
Do you want to hear a little more?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. How much practice do you feel that David Lee Roth and Eddie actually...
Yeah, right.
I think there was a, look, we're going to make some money here. David, you do your part, I'll do my part, and I'll see you in Greensboro.
Yeah.
And they just went at it.
That I mean, sounds about right.
If they're not going to scream here some of our new stuff, they've played it a billion times. They probably thought they could get away with it. And even if they thought, as great as Eddie is... They probably thought, even if it sucks a little, even if it's only a 9 instead of a 10, it's better than being in the same room together.
Right.
Okay.
And all anyone had to do is scream in the middle of the concert when people were booing, you want us to go get the guy from Extreme?
We'll do it.
We'll do it. I swear his scrawny ass is right backstage. I will get him. I didn't think so. Now shut up.
Three words for you. More than words.
That's right.
You know what's funny is I one time figured out, just because I was doing David a favor and opening for David Cassidy, and then I figured how many nights he played, and then I figured how many times since 1970 he's played I Think I Love You.
No.
It comes out to well over, I don't remember the exact number, but it comes out to well over 12,000 times.
Yeah.
And he still tanks it sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they do that. Look, any bands listening, when you're doing the live song, do the live song. You see me sitting here, I got my back against the record machine. Mm. It's not against the record machine.
No,
yeah,
it's not.
Like freestyle.
Freestyle.
Right.
Look, if Sinatra wants to cover Jump, then Sinatra can do it that way. But if David Lee Roth does Jump, then just do the Jump we effing remember.
And we could all do it exactly the same way, because we remember it the same way, and apparently he doesn't.
Well,
because you did the pronunciations right.
They get bored, and they try to play.
Or they suck.
Well, let's listen to the original, and then we'll listen to how he sort of emphasized him.
Oh, you're right. The record machine.
Yeah, he did his in a weird, sing-songy, lounge act kind of way. Which they do. I think they do it to say, hey, we're having fun with an old song, but I don't want you to have fun with an
old
song.
Don't have fun. Give it to us like the recording
version. And you know that part where we want you to play the old song? The part we forgot to tell you, which is no S, is do it like we remember it, too. All right, now let's hear his live.
So you don't think there's a chance he's just sucking? That he's trying to be new and different?
Yeah.
Maybe a little of both.
A little of both. All right, T-Bone, let's
gotta
take
jump
it
off.
Home.
That's the end.
Tomorrow's news. Today. Teresa Strasser. You, CNN.
Kirk Morrison, outstanding inside linebacker for the Los Angeles Oakland Raiders, is going to be on the show. Do a little NFL wrap up next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaduce, and Teresa Strasser.
Looks, throws, end zone picked off. It is picked off by Kirk Morrison.
And now, Oakland Raiders middle linebacker, Kirk Morrison, on the Adam Carolla Show.
Kirk Morrison.
What up?
What's happening, Kirk? Good to talk to you as usual. Again, living my dream, playing in the NFL. What a gig. I was sitting around watching you play over Jimmy Kimmel's yesterday, and I thought, you know what? You don't have to work tomorrow, and I have to get up at 5 a.m.
Oh, no, I've been up working this morning. I've been up.
Were you at the gym? Did you go by the facility?
Yeah, I went up and got a good workout in. And
what time?
I got about 7 o'clock. Well, actually, one of my best friends actually plays for the Chiefs. My college roommate, so I had to take him to the airport this morning. He stayed over for the night.
Some of us little scrawny white guys have to overcompensate. So I was in the gym at 4. So there.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm 5'6", and you can just smack me around like a doll. But that's not the point.
I'd give you $10 if you did, though, Kirk. Hey, Kirk, who do you know plays for the Chiefs?
Jeff Webb. He's a wide receiver. My college roommate. So, you know, that's one of those inside battles that you don't really see on paper, but yet on the field, me and him are, you know, kind of going at it. We never got a chance to really go at it in college. And so many times I wanted to, in practice, just knock his head off, but I couldn't do it because he was my teammate. You know, I need him on Saturdays in college, but now he's the enemy. So in between the lines, man, we went after it a little bit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because he was downfield trying to block you, and I'm guessing you're at least 30 pounds heavier than he is.
Oh, yeah, easily. So,
good time.
Yeah, we go at it a lot.
But it's nice. You got up this morning, and you drove him to the airport.
Yeah, drove to the airport.
Now, doesn't he have to fly back on the team plane, or did he?
Well, they don't have a game this weekend coming up, so.
Oh, they have a bye week.
It's a bye week, yeah. And especially when California kids usually go to, back to California for a game.
Mm-hmm.
They're leaning to let them stay because, a lot of family and friends come out.
So would the rules be, you don't have to be back in KC until Tuesday or something like that. What happens on a bye week? Do you guys still practice?
Yeah, definitely. You practice not as much as you do in a normal week. You do something just to make sure you keep the legs going, you keep the kind of the body in shape, you keep fine-tuning. But for the most part, you get guys time off. I mean, this is a – I remember I told one of my good friends, you know, he tried to get me to do an event, and I told him, I said, this is my last – this is my only weekend until 2008. I work every weekend.
Right.
2008, and when you really look at it, that's how it is. Till 2008, I'm working every Sunday.
Well, speaking of working, these guys are playing the Tennessee Titans next week, and I believe it was the Titans that kicked – 8 field goals yesterday, and if you want to know if that's a lot, it is, because it's an NFL record. And I was thinking about it. Nobody's ever going to beat 8. Somebody may tie 8, but who the hell's going to kick 9 field goals in a game? The record was 7 for a long time, and it was held by like 4 or 5 guys. Now the guy from the Titans, who the Raiders are playing coming up this weekend, kicked 8. What do you do to block a field goal? Where are you, Kirk? Are you out on the out there blocking it?
Well, it just depends. You know, we do a different scheme-wise. Either I'm pushing one of my big 300-pound guys in front of me, or I'm staying back watching for a fake. So
yeah.
The one time I did get a really, really good push, we won a football game against Cleveland. I got a guy, I pushed him right through, and you know, he blocked the field goal at the end of the game to win it. So.
There's a newish rule, which is no launching the skinny guy up into the air who gets a running start at the line.
Right. Is that true? Because I've seen, I don't know much about football, but I've seen that happen where they kind of step off another guy. Is that true?
Yeah. The rule used to be was, hey, 350 pounders, you guys stand there.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a running start and put my cleats up your back.
Right.
I'll launch myself in the air and see if I can intercept the pigskin.
Right.
You can jump, but you can't be launched anymore, right, Kirk?
Can't be launched anymore, nor you can't take a running start.
Oh, no running starts.
Wow.
No start to block a field goal, because if you land on either your teammate or an opponent from a running start.
You know what's funny? They used to have, there was a couple guys in the league long before your day, Kirk Morrison. There was a guy for the Kansas City Chiefs, who was very tall and very good at basketball, Jewish guy, and they would put him by the goalpost. And when there was a 55-yarder, he would stand underneath the goalpost. Now, he wouldn't try to block it in front where it was kicked. He would stand under the goalpost, and if the ball was only going to clear the goalpost by a foot or two, he'd jump straight up. And he would block it at the goalpost,
wow,
which is pretty cool. Now, the goalpost, by the way, is the height of a basketball rim, right? 10 foot?
10 feet, yeah.
Here's all you need to know about the NFL athletes. Somebody go out to a basketball court, not you, Kirk Morrison, but one of us. Go to a basketball court and see if you can touch the rim.
Oh, no.
It's hard. I'm 6'2". It's hard. I can touch the rim, but it's hard to touch the rim. Then watch Tony Gonzalez catch a touchdown pass in the fourth quarter in full uniform, helmet, pads, and everything else after playing football for 3.5 quarters and run over to the goalpost with the basketball and spike it and have the goalpost hit him somewhere in the bicep and have it shake when he spikes the ball. That's the kind of athletes in full pads. That's what you're dealing with.
Hey, I had a question for you, and it's going to take you a little bit back from something Adam was talking about, is playing hard against one of your really good friends, where you really hit them hard. I've got a boxing match coming up against a very, very, very nice man. And we were doing an interview, and I was done with my part, and I found out that I was interrupting the guy, so I left the room.
Huh?
But as I left the room, I heard him say, so this is going to be a friendly match. And I walked back in, and I said, that offends me. I said, there's no such animal. You walk in that ring with gloves on your hands, and you look across the ring, you could be my mom.
Oh, yeah.
There's no such animal as a friendly fight. When he goes down and hits the dirt before they carry him out to the ambulance, I'm going to give him a big kiss on the cheek and say sorry.
Why don't you call me Betty?
Betty, better watch yourself.
Is it the same thing with you? Can you really, if it takes it for the winner of the game, can you take one of your good friends and just take him down hard?
Yeah, I can do that.
If your mom was running the ball, you'd clothesline her. If it meant winning the game, right?
Winning the game, right? I mean, serious biz, you could drop your friend if that's what you had to do, no sweat.
I can do it, especially with mom too, because there's some things from my childhood.
Do you have some issues you'd like to resolve on out there on the field?
I just wanted to yes.
I mean, I'm seriously. I mean, me and my mom have some out of the ground. I mean, you know, a couple parties in high school. She never let me.
There's issues. Well, hopefully she'll suit up for the Titans this week. Kirk Morrison, we're out of time. Oakland Raiders versus Tennessee Titans. God love Kirk Morrison.
Man
has a
I
sense of humor.
Yeah.
Kirk, he got issues with his mom.
We'll be watching this weekend, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for a big Raiders win.
Please do, man. Please do.
I need it all.
Good to talk to you, Kirk Morrison.
Absolute
for the
pleasure,
Oakland Raiders. By the way, I won the football once again this week. I went 2-2, which means Danny went 2-2, but with the tiebreaker on the over-under, I won.
You're on a roll.
I am. I've been winning lately. We'll take a quick break. Be back after this. All right. Quickly, some thanks where thanks are due. I want to thank Steve Sharippa. Bobby Bacala, Steve Sharippa's Hungry, No Ass. Debuts in December on LifeSchoolTV.com. Dana Carvey, what a guy. The Grove of Anaheim's where you'll find him this Friday. Ticketmaster.com for tickets. Kirk Morrison, not only good sense of humor, but good linebacker, too. For the Oakland Raiders, Oakland versus Tennessee, this Sunday, 10 o'clock on the mother station, KLSX, and our own Teresa Strasser. TMZ TV tonight. Check local listings. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla saying mahalo.
I don't care how she spells it. K-I-M.